the original parliament program was that parliament will adjourn around 3 or so. Now parliament is adjourning around 5 or after 5. So what it means we have to take both post office and minister before 1 o'clock. So what the challenge in terms of time, because we cannot take minister around 6 o'clock in the evening after parliament. So I will just request members to make sure that they group their questions together. So that when they ask questions, we are able to move out of the question session to go to the other session. The second issue is that we are not going to deal with the informal liberation of the SACO fee. There's been a request from the department, Mr. Willis, the one who leads the team from DOC. I'm told he was involved in a car accident, so he can't be here to make the presentation. So we're going to shelve that and we're going to reschedule that at some other time. But for now, until one will deal with the SAPO, with the ITU Final Act, SAPO, and then the MIS. I hope members will cooperate in that regard so that we are able to finish all the three presentations before one, as far as possible. But we must also welcome the new minister and the deputy minister as a committee, as the president is already appointed. We welcome them in their absence and we wish them well in their new portfolios. We hope that they will be able to take this sector forward into where it's supposed to be. And also thanks to the minister and the deputy minister who have been redeployed. I think they've played their part. This is a run which you run your course, then others will continue with the run moving forward, like a relay. But without wasting time, I will just hand over to DOC to deal with the ITU Finance Act. But I will urge them, because they gave us a presentation, that they must not read the presentation, they must talk to the presentation, so that we save time. Comrade Mastori.
I think as the committee, maybe we have to also welcome you as a chairperson. I hope it's going to go on forever.
No, thanks, Master.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members, thank you. I'm aware that we're presenting this for the second time. I hope we'll be able to go a long way to meeting the expectations and the requirements of the committee. Okay, but to commence, really this presentation is about the need to ratify the final acts of the ITU Penitentiary Conference that took place in Antalya in 2006. The ratification process is really it's part of our international requirements under the constitution of the ITU. Although to date not many countries, I think it's only 36 have actually ratified it, and there's been some discussions within the ITU about stabilizing the constitution so that they don't have to engage in this process as often. Now, we were asked to give a bit of background on the ITU. I think everybody here knows that it's the leading UN agency for the information and communication sector. There are 109, well, at the time of this conference, there are 191 member states. It's now actually 192. The sector membership has fallen since the time of this to about 600. Sector members are private companies and other institutions that join the ITU in terms of one or more of the sectors. There's a telecommunications standardization sector which deals with international standards and interoperability issues. There's the development sector which deals with the development of networks and capacity building. And then there's the radio communication sector, which it deals with, as you would guess, radio communications, frequency allocations and so on. So it's a very big and quite dynamic UN-based organization, although it came to existence long before the UN did, and it was adopted within the UN system. It's actually the oldest UN organization in existence, which reflects on the need for international communication coordination in the field of communication. Okay, the plenipotentiary conference of the ITU is the supreme decision-making organ of the ITU, and it takes place every 4 years. Its role is to determine the 4-year strategic and financial plans of the Union. They conduct elections, which are very rigorous. Normally the conference takes place over a 3-week period. The first week is dominated by political and strategic level statements and discussions, and elections. And the election process is hotly contested, with countries hosting receptions, giving each other gifts, and all kinds of things go on. And they make statements and debates and lobby for reciprocal support and so on. So the key positions that are the subject of the elections are the Secretary General, Deputy Secretary General, then directors for each of the sectors, the telecommunications development sector, telecommunications standardization sector, and the radio communication sector. And each of these sectors has a very large work program by itself. In fact, in trying to prepare this presentation, I realized that probably each one would at some point merit a presentation on its own. In addition to those key positions, there's also the Executive Council and the Radio Regulations Board. In that, the Executive Council has a very key role because it oversees the work of the Union in between the plenipotentiary conferences. So the Council is responsible for decision-making and implementing, overseeing the implementation of the decisions of the plenipotentiary conference during the 4-year period when there's no plenipotentiary conference. The final act of the ITU, which is the document that we request ratification of, it contains amendments to the Constitution and the Convention of the ITU, the general rules of assemblies and meetings of the ITU, as well as the resolutions of the conference. And the resolutions are really decisions that prioritize the work and position of the ITU on key issues going forward, according to the views of the member states. In terms of the procedure for ratifying these acts, we normally commence with legal opinions. Once we have a document from the ITU that contains everything that was agreed, we go to the Chief State Law Advisor for. We start with justice, then we go to international. The Chief State Law Advisor indicated that the final acts are not in conflict with South African national legislation, and they're not in conflict with our international treaty obligations. That said, the Chief State Law Advisor International did indicate that the final acts are a binding international treaty and as such do have to be ratified by Parliament. As we proceeded, we were told that we should supply more information about the overall structure of the ITU. As I indicated, it is a big organization and it's a very active one. But the structure, as we indicated earlier, the plenipotentiary conference, it's the overall, it doesn't come out that well on the screen, but there was a one page included in the explanatory memorandum as an anecdote. So the plenipotentiary conference is the overall supreme decision-making body. The ITU Council, in between plenipotentiary conferences, oversees the work of the Union. Now we have something here that refers to world conferences on international telecommunications. As far as I know, well, this structure, it exists within the Constitution, but as far as I know, there's only been one. And that was in 1988. And this structure is mandated to deal with what is known as international telecommunications regulation. There is now going to be another one in 2012. It's a treaty-level structure, so it will produce an international treaty. And as I indicated earlier, the Chief State Law Advisor International would then advise that that should also be ratified by Parliament once it's agreed. Then we have the different sectors of the ICU. There's the radio communications sector, which consists of world and regional radio communication conferences. These are also treaty-level agreements. Then there's radio communication assemblies. There's a radio regulation board. There's a radio communication advisory group. And then there's what is known as study groups, all within the radio communication sector. When you look at the final act, you'll see quite often resolutions under the resolved part of the resolution will call for the ICU to study particular areas of work and interests of the member states. And these are done through the study groups. So most of the study groups exist in the radio communications sector. I think there's two in the development sector, and there's about five in the standardization sector, and around 11 in the radio communications sector. Then the next sector is the World Telecommunications Standardization Assembly. That's the standardization sector. That also has a meeting every 4 years. It's not a treaty-level meeting, but it produces recommendations which are implemented worldwide because they're useful and they become the industry norm. So the recommendations from standardization assemblies are adopted globally without the requirements of a treaty. Under the standardization sector, they have also the Telecommunications Standardization Advisory Group, and as I indicated, they have a number of study groups as well. And then there's the development sector. These are the three key sectors. The telecommunications development sector also has a world conference every 4 years. This deals with development issues. It's also not a treaty-level conference, but it directs a lot of the work of the ICU in terms of telecommunications development, including assistance for developing countries, technical assistance, regional development programs, and so forth. There's also a telecommunications development advisory group, and there's a couple of study groups that fall within the sector as well. So that's the main decision-making structures of the ICU. And then to service these decision-making structures, you have the General Secretariat, which is led by the Secretary General of the ICU. I think in terms of standing, he would be the equivalent of a cabinet minister normally. Then you have a Deputy Secretary General, and then you have the directors of the three sectors that we spoke about, the Radio Communications Bureau, Telecommunications Standardization Bureau, and the Telecommunications Development Bureau. So that's the basic structure that we're looking at. The structure is established under Article 7 of the Constitution. I've already indicated those aspects there, so we'll skip that. Okay, the radio communications sector, the main purpose of this is allocation of bands of radio frequency spectrum internationally, the allotment of radio frequency, and the registration of radio frequency assignments and associated orbital positions for geostationary satellite orbits. So the purpose is also to avoid harmful interference between radio stations in different countries. It's a large part of their work. It also coordinates efforts to eliminate harmful interference and improves the use of radio frequencies. Major tasks ahead include ensuring the effective use of radio frequency spectrum, undertaking studies concerning the development of radio communication systems, and the use of radio communications in disaster mitigation and in relief operations. This also includes, in fact, predicting natural disasters as well as relief from them. And the development sector's main role is to develop appropriate and transparent legal and regulatory framework to promote access to ICT. They provide analysis of the latest international ICT trends and facilitate comparable data to monitor ICT development. They seek to facilitate access to and use of internet resources. They also seek to build or contribute to the building of trust and confidence in the use of ICTs. Trust and confidence in the use of ICTs is really language from the World Summit on the Information Society, and it really relates to cybersecurity. Then a large part of the work was also around building human capacity and providing assistance to least developed countries and countries with special needs. They also facilitate efforts around disaster preparedness and relief, and providing technical, policy, regulatory, and legal support in terms of emergency communications, because you need to have some kind of an infrastructure that will allow for outside assistance in the case of countries where that are prone to major natural disasters that could compromise their communication system. One of the most topical issues at the moment is around climate change. To reduce emissions from the use of ICTs and to use ICTs to reduce emissions and to reduce e-waste production and to facilitate disposal of e-waste. Then they also look at digital inclusion projects, promoting access and accessibility for disadvantaged groups and for populations in remote and rural areas. And they provide a global platform for discussion of development priorities and adoption of regional action plans to guide development work in the ICT sector worldwide. When they meet, if it was in the World Telecommunications Development Conference, part of the program is to develop regional action plans. And these are coordinated regionally and approved at the WTDC, the World Telecommunications Development Conference. And in the case of Africa, these are normally adopted through the AU structure, so they become part of the official AU work. In the standardization sector, as I indicated earlier, they facilitate production of internationally accepted standards, affecting core network functionality, broadband, next generation network services such as IPTV, and facilitating global interoperability and standards for the efficient functioning network. In terms of the elections that took place at Antalya in 2006, Sadat was re-elected as a member of the Executive Council. Sadat had joined the ITU in 1994, and we were elected to council for the first time in 1998. So we've remained on the council since then. At the time, it was a 46-member state. And the way it works is that the seats are divided into the different regions, so that each region has a proportional number of seats reflecting the membership of the ICU. So Africa is actually the largest region with 13 seats. At this conference, it was the first time that an African was elected to the post of Secretary General. The election of Mr. Touré of Mali was a reflection of very effective and efficient coordination of the Africa group and a lot of unity on their part. He was a convincing winner. Now, we were also asked to address the mandate of the ICU, and this is best found in Article 1 of the Constitution, which deals with purposes of the Union. It's actually quite a good question because I think at every plenipotentiary conference this issue comes up, and certain countries have taken to trying to insert the word within the mandate of the ICU into every single resolution that's passed, which is really an attempt to try and limit the scope of its work. Okay, but the mandate is basically international cooperation to improve and facilitate the rational use of telecommunications, to foster cooperation and partnership between entities, different entities involved in the activities of the Union with member states. So in other words, that would be the sector members and associate members, which can be private companies, international organizations, industry representatives. It could be NGOs, but I think the membership fees are probably a bit high for sector members, for NGOs to become sector members. It also looks at technical assistance for developing countries and the mobilization of resources and access to information, including best practice and so on. And then it looks at the development of technical facilities to improve the efficiency, the usefulness, and availability of telecommunication services. This relates a lot to the standardization sector. The ICU is also mandated to cooperate with other world and regional intergovernmental organizations, as well as NGOs, with respect to the role of telecommunications in the global information economy and society. That's one of the measures to try to ensure that there's not too much overlap of mandates or roles within the international system. Because as we're all member states, we pay money for the work that the ICU does. We don't want to duplicate other organizations, especially intergovernmental ones, which we could also be members of. So there's that direction to the Secretary General to ensure. And then it deals with the allocation of radio frequency spectrum bands, the allotment of radio frequencies, the registration for the allotment of radio frequencies and registration for orbital positions of satellites, as we discussed earlier, avoiding the interference between countries, and to eliminate harmful interference between radio stations and to improve the use of radio frequency spectrum.
Before you proceed, there seems to be a problem with our slides and what we are going to. I'm not sure whether we've got the exactly same presentation.
Oh.
But maybe you can proceed. We just try to get the one which is the same as the one we are dealing with. The content seems to be the same, except that there seems to be somewhat different in terms of where you allocate the same slides which you have given us before. But maybe proceed, we'll try to check the correct one.
Okay, I think there may have been a section added on the structure. So I'm not sure what slide number would be, but this should be within the slide, the mandate part.
Slide 9.
Okay.
Yeah, you can see you're at slide 14 or at slide 9, so there's a problem with the slide. But don't worry, continue the presentation. We'll try to get the correct one.
Okay, apologies for that. We're dealing with the second part on the mandate of the ICU. Right, just give people a minute to, or should I just proceed? Okay. Okay, and then of course the other part of the mandate, as is clear under the structure, is the international standardization of telecommunications. Then there's the role of the ICU as in providing international cooperation and solidarity for technical assistance to developing countries, and the creation and development and improvement of telecommunications globally. And the next part then is harmonizing the development of telecommunications facilities globally. This is to ensure interconnectedness and interoperability. Collaboration to ensure the provision of affordable telecommunications. This can be with different entities involved in development work. Then there's the work around the ICU relating to safety of life and communications, the role of communications in emergencies. And the ICU then has a responsibility which relates to the study group that I mentioned earlier, to undertake studies and then through that work adopt resolutions and recommendations and regulations. It also engages and provides support for social projects in underserved areas. And it has a role in promoting participation in the activities of the union. So that would be beyond just member states, but could relate to sector members, NGOs, and a range of multi-stakeholders. Now, when we got to the actual part on the final act, which relates to the final act, as we indicated earlier, it has amendments to the Constitution and the Convention and the general rules of the ITU, as well as resolutions to the ITU. So in presenting this part, I think a lot of the final acts, they're not really that interesting or useful to discuss. I mean, some of them are very administrative, and they really focus on the running of the ITU as an organization. It's like the rules of a organization and the principles and the rules of procedures and so on. So when we present this part, we were really looking at the part that we thought was interesting going forward. And one of the key debates when we were in Antalya in 2006 was around the international telecommunications regulations. Now, I mentioned earlier when we looked at the structure, there was something called World Conferences on International Telecommunications. And as far as I know, they'd only met once, and that was in 1988. The role of that conference is to review international telecommunications regulations at a treaty level. So there have been various attempts to try and engage this issue about the need to review the international telecommunications regulations, and I think at previous 20th century conferences, and finally in Antalya, they finally agreed that they would hold the World Conference on International Telecommunications in 2012. The international telecommunications regulations deal with the definition of international telecommunications services, cooperation between countries and national administrations, safety of life and the priority of telecommunications, and charging and accounting principles for global telecommunications. We supported the resolution as the issue is important to many developing countries, and the regulations are obviously somewhat out of date because they haven't been updated since 1988, although they are still utilized. But there has been an explosion of activity in the ICT sector since 1988, so a lot of issues are not incorporated in those regulations. So they agreed, as I said, that the IT Council should set a date and an agenda for the World Conference on International Telecommunications, and that has been done. The debate has now moved on. They're now arguing about, there's now an argument about what falls within the scope of the World Conference on International Telecommunications. Some countries don't want them to discuss any issues that are not already there, and others feel that there's a need to put forward new issues. Then another key part of the final act related to the internet issues, and a large part of this was an outcome from the World Summit on the Information Society, which took place in 2003 and 2005. The conference adopted new and revised resolutions on IP-based networks and the role of member states in managing internationalized domain names and the ITU's role with regard to public policy issues pertaining to the internet and managing internet resources, including domain names and addresses. That was the internet component, and it included that IT should study some of these things, especially around the public policy aspects of the internet and where it had a role to play, and that countries shouldn't interfere in the country code domain names of other countries. Because there have been problems in that regard before, because the internet is really managed by private sector institutions. So, as such, it's not really run in a way which is subject to international law, which is the cause of quite a lot of tension within the ITU. So it was an important resolution to make some headway on that issue. Then they have another resolution related to strengthening the role of ITU in building confidence and security in the use of ICTs. As I indicated earlier, this is really an issue around cybersecurity. The language is coming from the World Summit on the Information Society. So the resolution calls on the ITU to assess and address existing and future threats with respect to cybersecurity issues. And it was also instructed to facilitate access to assist in enhancing confidence and security in use of ICTs for all member states, access to tools that can support member states in engaging in cybersecurity measures. Another important resolution related to the strengthening regional presence. It involves an evaluation for strengthening the ICU's regional offices. In the case of Southern Africa, we have one in Zimbabwe. And a review to meet the evolving requirements and priorities of each region. The idea is to, although there are budgetary limitations at the time of this resolution, the idea was to try and improve the quality of the ICU's involvement in the different regions and the capacity to support regional development initiatives, especially those that were the outcomes of the World Telecommunications Development Conference. And then in terms of contributory units, the way membership fees work within the ITU is that countries are allowed to choose within certain limitations the number of contributory units they make to the ITU. And the conference will then consider countries' intentions in terms of the number of those contributory units against the budgetary requirements that they have, and then they will set the size, the proposed upper limit of the contributory units. So in Antalya, the size of the contributory units will increase from 318 Swiss francs to 330,000 Swiss francs. And then member states will request South Africa elected to increase the number of contributory units from 3 to 4. This is in light of the need to support the ITU in its expanded mandate in terms of implementing the outcomes of the World Summit on the Information Society, and the fact that we had a Secretary General who is now more highly motivated to address developing country issues as an African leader. Okay, as Chairperson, that's the end of this presentation. I'm available to take any questions, obviously.
Yeah, thank you very much for the comprehensive presentation this time around.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Members, that's the presentation which you requested to be returned. After we had the first one, which we thought didn't give us more information. But I hope members just went through the presentation, they are ready with their questions. Any questions, members? If there are none, you can just adopt it and pass it. Honorable Member Ben?
Thank you, Chairperson. There's two questions. Maybe I missed something during the presentation. I need to know who represents every country at the ITU. And then secondly, what role the ITU plays in the cybercrime. For example, there's a lot of scams, email scams, money being withdrawn from people's bank accounts, and a lot of scams to Facebook. What do you play in those respective areas?
I hope you got the question. It's in relation to what you have talked about cybercrime and the other things. Can you respond?
Okay. In terms of representation of the member states, the different member states, they send national delegations, sometimes these are led by ministers or senior officials. But at the IT Plenipotentiary Conference, ministers don't normally stay after the first week. They'll normally attend for the first week, but they'll have a delegation of officials who will sit late into the night discussing the exact wording of every resolution with all the language barriers that you can imagine with 193 different member states. Normally what happens is in the first week, the high-level stuff is fine. We have lots of discussions and so on. Then the next week, the meetings head off until 10 or 12 at night, and we even lose the weekend. So they're very, very detailed debates. And sometimes it's also difficult to know what exactly every country is arguing for. But basically, that's what it is. It's delegations of officials, sometimes led by a minister, but including very often representatives of industry and regulators from those countries that have independent regulators, which not all of them do. And then on the second question, yes, I think that's really one of the most challenging areas that we face, all of us as member states, as members of the UN system, is to deal with cybercrime. There are different structures to deal with this issue. The IT's role is a contested one. Some countries are trying to limit its role. Other countries would like to expand its role, especially developing countries. They're very keen that the IT could play a bigger role because it's an organization where they have quite a lot of influence in developing countries. But really, the IT's role is really more to do with providing technical assistance, policy frameworks, legal frameworks, and best practice solutions for countries to equip themselves to deal with cybersecurity-related issues. I don't know if they're actually allowed to use the word cybercrime in IT at the moment, but the work is relevant, but it's not exactly specifically dealing with each of the issues that you've raised, Honourable Member.
Thanks for the response. Members, the table is preparing the report which we must adopt, but the report is not ready now, it's being prepared. I would suggest that maybe we go to the next presentation. When the report comes, we'll go into it and then adopt the report. Thanks very much, Josie, for the presentation.
It's on the screen.
I can email it to you, because you know, the battery on the laptop doesn't exist, so I can't charge it up again without having power. If you give me the email, I can do it from the office now.
I've got no contact details for you, and I'm really going to be lost if you don't have it.
Sorry, let me just grab a card.
If anything goes wrong, then you're wrong.
You see, today we're trying to write a committee effectively and efficient in terms of time. So, if you are ready, you can proceed. Welcome the chairperson, the CEO, the COO, and the other members from SAP. You can take the floor, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. And also, like me, you would like to thank the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee of Communications to give us the opportunity today to present our annual financial results. It's been a hard year, but we are very pleased to come to you and at least present an organization that is still striving to do better and doing much better in very, very, very difficult conditions, where worldwide the postal sector has suffered. We've seen what is happening with the Royal Mail. People are closing down, and it's a crisis. In the U.S., it's a crisis in parts of Europe, but in South Africa, we continue to deliver whatever it takes. Honorable Chair, I think I'm just going to ask the CEO to quickly introduce her team before we start. We know there are time limitations, but it's always useful for us to get, for you to get a sense of who we brought today.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The chairperson of SAPO was just speaking. We have the CFO of the organization, Mr. Nick Buick. They will raise their hands as I introduce them. Mr. John Wenzel, the COO, the Chief Operations Officer. Mr. Maputa Daya, the Group Executive Human Resources. Ms. Marie Lancaster, Group Executive Strategy. Ms. Andala Mnisi, Group Executive Consumer Services. Johan Nodier, the Senior Manager in Legal. The two people who are entering is Mr. Matibe, the MD of CSG and responsible for logistics as a whole. He will raise his hand to be acknowledged. Mr. Trix Kripu, who is very familiar in the committee, is responsible for our public affairs. Ms. Betty Bulunga, I introduced her last week as a company secretary, and Mr. Tom Pello, the assistant company secretary, and Ms. Rhoda Petra, who raised her hand, is in the appropriate affairs, and we will be having other executives coming in. The head of our mail business has just walked in. He normally calls himself the person who runs the business that runs the business. And he's just walking in, Mr. Yanga Koti. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. We won't go through all the slides, but it's just you've got the copy, and so we'll focus more on what we have in terms of the PowerPoint. The first slide, Honorable Chairperson, just allow me to introduce the results, which will be presented by the Group CEO and the CFO. The first slide talks to our mandate as the post office in terms of the framework within which we operate. Just to highlight that, the legislative framework in terms of the mandate is what literally drives us, and the priority we put in terms of the universal service obligation, and hence we continue to come here in terms of the current bills, and grateful to the committee for passing, for ensuring that Parliament passes the post-bank bill. We're at a point now where we are ensuring that the key priorities of government are being aligned to the priorities of the post office. And as part of that, we are working with DOC in making sure that from last year and going towards next year, the support strategy and corporate plan is aligned to the key deliverables of government, particularly in terms of the incoming growth plan. And I'm not going to talk through this, but this is the essence of what we're about as a post office in terms of the targets. We view ourselves, and also the mandates indicate, that we are the delivery arm of the government services, particularly in terms of the targets that have been set in ensuring that we deliver to all households on an equitable basis, recognizing the backlogs that we have from, you know, in terms of the legacy that we have as a post office, but we've done quite a lot, and the CEO will talk to that, in terms of ensuring that we roll out 1.5 addresses annually to make sure that those who do not have access continue to have access. Another area of focus in terms of our mandate has been the increase of access to financial services, and we'll hear later in terms of how well we've done that, particularly in terms of the marginalized area, with us being the champions in terms of the market share in the Mzansi account, and also focus on human resource development through learning opportunities. We've got a very well-established learning institute within the post office that ensures that we also work with other institutions, and the CEO will also talk to that. We've done quite a lot in terms of IET infrastructure improvements, particularly the modernization. The post office is over 200 years old, and it always is difficult to ensure that we modernize the facilities that we have, but we are very proud in terms of how much we've done in that regard. I would like to move to the next one. This slide basically gives a sense of our governance framework. Primarily, it focuses on those we account to, our levels of accountability and compliance mechanisms that we have internally, and which frameworks we account in terms of. And in terms of accountability, you know, starting from the bottom, portfolio committee with the regulations particularly, and then if you look from the top, it would be the DOC and the stakeholders, internal stakeholders within SAPO and our customers. And on the other side, it presents the accounting framework in terms of the regulations that we have, King 3 protocols, TFMA, etc. And the accountability includes the oversight role by the shareholder that we are accountable to as well, as well as internally with the board and the board of services, and specific structures that have been established within the post office in terms of EXCO, ALCO, Asset Liability Committee, Audit Risk, etc. But what is important is always, you know, when we present the results, without wasting time, we like to bring back the context, because it's important to see how far have we gone. And this takes us from the time when the post office was together as part of the government department, as the Department of Post and Telecommunication prior to 1991, and us in October 1991, 1st of October, being separated as two companies, the South African Post Office and Telkom, and also in 1994, the Department of Communication being established with the ICASA being formed as the regulator. And within that, we present, you know, the various stages we've gone through as a post office to get where we are, and how that, you know, forms part of the legacy that we continue to be burdened with, at the same time what we draw from in terms of strength and the achievements. Where we are now, from the time of the initial commercialization in 1991, where we brought in 1999 to 2000 the strategic management partner in the name of the New Zealanders and the troubles that we've had, and also starting the restructuring and transformation era from 2001, where we began to see changes within the company, and the repositioning era to where we are now, where we're trying very hard to establish growth, development, and sustainability trajectories. We've done quite a number of things from the time we worked as a board from 2006 and 2007, particularly when we started with following the problems that we experienced in terms of governance as a post office, where to focus strategically in terms of what we do. And from 2007, our focus has been on stakeholder relation building, organizational health tech, governance policies and systems review, organizational strategy, particularly in terms of 2007 to 2011, within which now we're reporting, and the governance and board operational plan. What is also important is that we work very closely with the Communication Workers Union in terms of ensuring that the transformation within the company, but also with a strong focus on anti-corruption, with an anti-corruption strategy that we together developed. I'd like at this point to sort of also, as we present the results, continue to present where we're coming from. Taking an organization that has been making losses, with this slide showing the operational operating profits from 2001 to where we're sitting, and we're seeing, you know, the challenges still in terms of the economic crisis of 2009, that despite all those problems, we're continuing, but and also the strikes that we had last year. So I'm very proud, honorable members, to actually give pay tribute to the staff of the post office, over 17,000 members, and the executive members who are here today, who have worked very hard in very difficult circumstances and sometimes unstable conditions to make sure that we continue to deliver profitability. And it is at this point that I would like to announce to the committee that we are very sad to say at this time, with our chief financial officer, Mr. Nick, next to me, who has worked with us during this period to make sure that we turn around the company, that we are coming to the end of his contract as the chief financial officer. In terms of the South African Post Office, articles of association with the shareholder, an executive director, which he has been, can only serve 2 terms of 5 years, and Nick has been with us for 9 years, and at this point, as the board and the minister came to the conclusion that it is not feasible for us to just appoint Nick for 1 year. So we are sadly going to miss Nick as the chief financial officer, and we've started processes in terms of making sure that we get that. But at the same time, we're not letting him off the hook. We're ensuring that he continues to work with us going forward in different portfolios. The work that we present now in the results, because of the very strong strategic approach and business model based on what we call the 3 C's, what we did was to ensure that we improve on the controls and the systems and the whole consolidation within the company, because we're struggling still with the silos. So the process of consolidation has ensured that we improve our efficiencies and also manage costs within the company, and the CEO will talk to that. And the corporatization process, which does not just deal with the post bank, but broadly within the company, and corporate citizenship. We focus quite a lot on that because of the image that we had as a post office. Just lastly, the next slide. To take the last slide to the next level in terms of board size, this is very important because this is where, as a board, we work very closely with EXCO to make sure that the board committees are focused on the priorities and ensuring that they are deliverable. So when we get assessed as board, we get assessed as individual board members as well as in terms of our collaboration with the executives on the outcomes. And these are some of the outcomes that we're proud to present in terms of the achievements on the consolidation, the financial services, logistics, as well as the information infrastructure, ensuring that we have in terms of enablement for the business, particularly the IT platform, an integrated IT platform that takes us to the strategy that we have now beginning to roll out of the multi-channel strategy. We have challenges, however, and the challenges deal particularly with the economic crisis, which has hit us very badly. And it continues to hit us because as we look at recovering in South Africa with our monetary policy and interest rates that are cut, whilst we're happy as individuals that our interest rates are cut, we see the trouble of that in terms of our bottom line, and Nick will talk to that particularly from a post-bank perspective and the savings. And the financial crisis has an impact on us. Whenever there is a state-owned enterprise that is experiencing problems and oversight implications, we do know that, you know, we need to continue to be aggressive and rigorous, and generally the image and trust by society has implications in terms of the morale of the organization broadly. but we try our best to deal with that. At another level, which we'd like to bring to the attention of the committee, is that whilst we have a government mandate of service delivery, being a service delivery arm of the state, we have experienced within this past financial year conflicting legal and policy reality, where, I mean, in some cases, you know, we've been taken to court and dealing with some of those cases at this point, and we're dealing with cabinet in terms of how to deal with some of those realities, because they are not just about non-compliance, there are constitutional issues between ourselves and competition that we are needing to iron out, but this is not the time to talk to them, but just to highlight that there are gaps that require specific attention that we need to address at some stage with the committee. I think lastly, CEO, please, the critical issue is about placing SAPO within the evolving country growth path and development trajectory. There is no way, I mean, we are at this point quite happy that the country, I mean, the government particularly, has come up with this growth path, because it ensures that we are focused in terms of how we position the South African Post Office within the country, and because we can only do this work if we work in, together and in alignment with government strategy and being supported. Particularly, another area which we would like the government, I mean the committee, to assist us is on the area of social development, particularly in terms of enabling the delivery of the social programs of government. At this point, I will hand over to the CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Recognizing the need for time, Honourable Chair, I will run through some of the slides and I will indicate where I will stop where we are going to have discussions. But our vision being to be recognized among the leading providers of postal and related services in the world, I would like to say at this point in time, we are in fact indeed proud of the South African Post Office, of the position that we are taking globally within the African continent as it stands, in terms of our involvement, our participation, but also in terms of some of the leading issues that we are dealing with. In particular, the ones that I would like to recognize is our address expansion program that we have done that will be recognized by the UPU on the 9th of November, where we will be awarded a certificate as South Africa, as one of those countries in the world who have really rolled out addresses, specifically in the rural areas, in a way that it is quite feasible for service delivery and extension of service delivery as a whole. We continue with our mission of enabling the nation to efficiently connect with the world by distributing information, goods, financial and government services, by leveraging our broad reach and embracing change, technology and innovation. And some of the innovation we'd like to be able to share with the committee today, and we have in fact brought a team that will assist us, and I'll talk to that just in a minute. In terms of our values, we have five values that the organization holds all our employees to, and we make sure that we live these values as we go through, and some of the programs I'm going to talk to will align to the values that we talk about. Honourable members, I would just like to say, as the Chair has indicated, the Board of SAPOM, when it approved the strategy and the current business model, made it very clear that what we need to be looking at is that we have strategized, you know, where our vision is, implementation on making sure that the business model and the strategy are approved. And as we go through our presentation today, we would like to show progress in some of those issues that we had committed ourselves to in our strategy plan and our annual plan as we go through. Just in terms of performance highlights, despite a very, very challenging year, where we were stuck with a very long industrial action and quite a loss in terms of business that has gone through, an economic downturn that has seen mail volumes decline by 7% year on year. I should say, I always say to the Chair, I mean, it's indeed proud that the South African Post Office has managed to go through that, to be able to deliver still a profit of 379 million, which is down compared to the previous year. But under the trading conditions, I think it is something that is commendable. Group operating revenue was up to 5.9 billion. Our capex expenditure that we had was spent at 551 million. And some of the recognitions that we have gotten over the year, that it is under review, recognized by the Black Management Forum as the most progressive company, We were the winner of the annual report, state-owned entity by JSE. I do need to indicate that this was the third time that we were listed and shortlisted in the JSE annual report award processes. And we are in fact very proud again this year, our annual report, in terms of that we are still shortlisted and the award will be on the 4th on Thursday night, and we hope to still win it. And if we do, it will be the third time in about 5 years that we have entered that we would have won. In terms of our financial system Oracle Award, the International Oracle Award, and also the only African company recognized at Future Strategies and Global Awards for excellence in business process management and workflow. As one of our objectives was to make sure that our business processes are efficient and in fact documented, and it's one of the leading issues that we got last year. But more importantly, I do want to talk about what the post office has done, recognizing that Postbank is soon going to be corporatized and wanting to position Postbank. In our environmental strategy, we in fact have we inaugurated what we call the Postbank Climate Leadership Award last year. We're doing it in partnership with Prime Media, and we awarded the first award last year, and we will be awarding the second award to go through in terms of showing how the post office and Postbank in particular can help within communities in ensuring that environmental strategies are put into place. In terms of the government mandate, the chairperson has indicated the issues around physical addresses. We continue to roll out our physical addresses quite strongly. We rolled out more than 1.6 million addresses that we had. In terms of customers that walked through the post office's doors in the year, we had 73.5 million customers, 99 million transactions. Our Postbank depositors book grew by 10.8%, and our policy service is standing at 96 versus a target of 95. In terms of our retail rollout, we in fact last year rolled out 64 new post offices, renovated 70, upgraded or relocated our post offices that we had. I do need to at this point pause and say our target that is in there is 100 new post offices and 100 renovated post offices. But in terms of the performance that we had last year, with all the difficulties, this was the best performance that we have had in terms of rollout in the past 3 years that we have managed to go through. For enabling economic opportunity, we still remain a level 4 BBB contributor after our assessment, and 56% of the budget spent was spent on enterprise development and BBB companies that we had. Carbon emissions, having set our baseline the year before, and also in line with our environmental plan, we started going through measuring exactly what we have done. And you can see the carbon emissions and performance that we have done through that. So on average, we have 3.4 kilotons of carbon emissions per month against a target of 3.6 kilotons per month. We planted 1,000 trees together with a partnership with Food and Trees for Africa. We've introduced a paper recycling program within the organization, and those are the terms that we have. And we measure our fossil fuel usage baseline, what's that, and we continue to measure, which I will indicate in this year performance in terms of where we are. In terms of our customers, extension of our e-postal services offering, where we've now offered not only our e-post box online, we now have MVL that you can do, motor vehicle licensing that you can do within the post offices. And we'll be introducing some of the things that we've also introduced in terms of innovation for this year. Our ISO accreditation program for the organization still continues with a main focus on the first business unit, which is male business, well on track for us to be able to go through. But I think more importantly is the entrenchment of the high-performance culture that with the board's insistence and also what we have done, looking at how we can, in fact, improve performance within the post office. Skills development and training that we have done right through the organization, recognition of prior learning, as we know that within the post office we have people who have a lot of experiences but may not necessarily have the qualifications. So we have gone through with the relevant speakers to go through the recognition of prior learning programs that we have put into the organization to in fact acknowledge the knowledge that people have and to get them certified for proper certification as we go through. We maintain our equity targets. We are still very proud that even in the diverse workplace awards that we keep on being recognized through the business women associations and others as we go through the post office, we continue maintaining that. In terms of our wellness program, it is a healthy workforce that delivers that is very productive. We have seen 65% of participation in HIV/AIDS testing, voluntary testing, in occupational health testing and assessments that employees go through. That we try to make sure that as we go through, we develop the workforce and make sure that everybody, starting from the CEO and down, goes through the programs and we can be able to deal with that. Some of those programs, just to indicate that, in terms of that, we have also done programs for not only internal staff, but small, medium, the SMMEs that we do business with, who require training, for example, in computer training, because they may not be able to do that. So we have also extended it, not just internally in the organization, but also outside. In terms of the Project Vision Learners, we also have a very interesting program that we are working with the Eastern Cape on making sure that we can get people in rural development, in agriculture, who go through a process where they can be getting financial literacy, that we then empower them to be able to run their small businesses in a good way. Just an indication of one of the regions that we have, which is the best region for self-graduation and some management issues that we need to do. As the committee members would remember, there's a time that the post office was very tough with legal cases that have been in there. And what we are trying to indicate is some of the progresses that have been achieved within the post office in terms of showing new cases that are coming through year on year and the cases that we have had before. And you'll see the 1998 to 2007, that's where we had the majority of our cases. But if you see year on year, you'll see that the new cases that are coming in and outstanding cases are coming to a point where they're getting reduced. So at this point in time, we have a total of 18 outstanding cases with one major case that we are dealing with that is about, that has a liability of about 1.3 billion. But if you take that one out, we are sitting at, in fact, a legal liability of less than 800 and something million that we have. So it has been quite a phenomenal contribution that has been made, and I think part of it is also the assistance that we've managed to get from the board, but also the assistance that we've got from the shareholder and other departments in terms of working with us on that issue. In terms of the overall review of the period, just before I hand over to the CFO, is to say as we acknowledge the processes that we've gotten into and some of the improvements, there are still some gaps that we need to close and some challenges that we need to have to deal with. And we've just broken them into four: organizational culture, the financial growth and long-term sustainability, the operational model, and human capital. Issues around continuous improvement and performance management, governance and compliance. As we know, legislation changes all the time, the regulations changes all the time. We need to be able to continue improving that. As far as operational model is concerned, we have an operational model that we have put into place with a very clear objective of making sure that the post office is customer-centric. We believe that we still have a long way to go in making sure that we achieve that customer centricity that we have, and in doing so, making sure that our efficiency can be benchmarked with the best of the best. I think what has come through, and it has come through the legislative processes that we have, is that in fact our operational model should be in such a way that we have a lot of flexibility and agility. As a post office, we operate in a very regulated environment within our mail business, but the rest of the business of the post office is in fact in a very competitive space, and therefore agility and flexibility in being responsive to customer needs becomes a major concern that we have. In terms of the sustainability, new revenue generation is very key. Our declining mail volumes that we have seen in the past 2 to 3 years is a major concern for us, and therefore substitution and diversification becomes a key issue. The CFO will speak in detail. We'll talk in detail about the PRMA liability that we have to do, and the chair has already alluded to the subsidy reduction that we have to face. For honourable members, in the last MCF, our subsidy was to be phased out into the next three, in the next cycle, we're starting this year with the next 3 years coming through, and we have looked at that in terms of how best we are going to go through, and some of it will be spoken to by the CFO. Human capital retention strategy. We are in a competitive market for skills. We need to be able to remunerate people in a way that they will be able to stay, but also to ensure that we can be able to attract the right jobs. If you look at the banking, both post and corporatization, that becomes a very, very key focus for us going forward. And that's where we're sitting. I'm going to ask the Group Chief Financial Officer to then take us through the financial performance.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Before I get into the detail, there are two key drivers which really, just to talk about the economic environment which we're operating at the moment. There are two key drivers to the business from a revenue perspective. Those are interest rates and mail volumes. You can see the interest rates. What happened is the interest rates now are sitting at their lowest for about 30 years, and that's having a severe impact on our revenue performance. In fact, our revenue dropped by some 250 million during the year under review, despite the growth in the post-bank book. That's really as a result of the declining interest rates. So interest rates certainly have an impact on our business, particularly as we are diversifying into financial services and the banking environment. The other area, of course, is, and you can see the impact that's had on the interest revenue, which has declined by 27% to 495 million in 2009, 2010. And we're forecasting a further 8% decline in the 2011 financial year. The other area that I talked about was mail volume. And you can see internationally, mail volumes tend to follow GDP. So as GDP grows, so does mail volumes grow. And that's been the trend internationally until the last 5 years or so, where we are seeing a break in that link. So in other words, we've seen a GDP going up, a mail volume coming down. And I think that's mainly as a result, in fact, a lot of countries in the world call it a technology wedge or something along those lines. You can see that in our current environment, whilst we've seen a decline in GDP of 3.8%, we've seen an even faster decline in mail volume. So you can see the impact that technology is having on the mail volume business. Now, unfortunately, we've got both interest rates and mail volumes going the same way at the same time, so that's having a double impact. Despite that, though, I think the company has managed to perform incredibly well from a financial perspective in the last year. We've only seen a 1% revenue decline, so we can see that diversification of our business is actually starting to make an impact in terms of our top-line performance. So we've only seen a revenue decline of 1%. We've also managed, despite high fuel prices, despite high wage settlements in our business over the last 2 years, we've managed to actually show a reduction in costs. So from a tight cost control perspective, expenses have actually come down by 2%. The area that has impacted us most significantly in the last financial year is our liability to pensioners for subsidies on medical aid. Medical aid inflation is actually growing at a much faster rate than normal CPI. And we do have a liability to a section of our staff that have retired where we actually subsidize their medical aid contributions. In terms of the accounting standard, we have to bring that onto our balance sheet. And you can see the impact that's had gone up from 45 million to 200 million. In fact, in the current year as well, that's going to go up again to 300 million. So that is having a significant impact and something that the board and the management of the organization is working on to reduce that cost. As a result of that, our profit before tax has actually declined by 22% to 488 million. Net profit has actually gone down by 20% to 366 million. Despite that, despite the economic environment, I think still a creditable performance in the 2010 financial year. That just shows you the numbers, and you can see that the profit last year was 366 million, and in 2010, it's gone down to 293 million, although I think still a healthy performance and still generating good cash flows, which has improved our balance sheet considerably. The post office, the company itself, this is excluding the subsidiaries, but at the moment includes Postbank. At the moment, it still runs as a division of the organization, and has once they corporatized, that will be run as a subsidiary. But the post office, including the bank, has also generated a healthy return of some 274 million for the year. The subsidiary performance, these are mainly our courier businesses. We have two subsidiaries, CFG and DocX. We also have a counter courier business, which is Speed Services, which we are planning to integrate into the CFG organization to create one courier subsidiary. And you can see that we generated revenue in 2009-2010 of nearly 700 million and an operating profit of some 148 million. So our courier business is a significant contributor along with Postbank to the overall group financial performance. And the net profit for the year, 37 million rand. Just to really unpack the revenue for you in a little bit more detail, you can see that the mail revenue has increased by 3%. Now, we actually got a tariff increase of 9%, so you can see that there was actually a real decline in mail revenue. And you can see that that's still 65% of our business, overall business. So to the extent that we see the decline in revenue, it has a significant impact on the overall group performance. Logistics down by 10%. Financial services revenue up by 7%. We're starting to see the impact of things like share schemes, which we are implementing, motor vehicle license renewals, and other financial transactions up, over and above our post-bank income. That's starting to have a significant impact, positive impact on our performance. And there you can see the interest revenue, which is what I mentioned, was down by some 179 million rand for the year as a result of the declining interest rates, giving us that total revenue of 6 billion, which is down slightly on the year before. This just shows the overall performance from a revenue perspective, and you can see that 61% is our mail business, logistics account for 24%, and logistics 13%, and financial services some 22 to 24% of the overall business. I'll just go through these slides quickly. Our main contributor to our cost is staff. It makes up 50% of our revenue. So you can see that for every rand we actually collect, 50 cents goes to staff costs. We've managed to keep that despite the relatively high wage settlement in the year under review. We still managed to keep that cost increase to only 2%. The other big area is transport. That's actually gone down by 11%. So a lot of rationalization of routes and integration of our transport between our mail business and our courier business has actually seen a nice downward trend in that cost. Accommodation is not, as some people think, hotel bills. It's actually the rental that we actually spend on all our outlets across the country. We have some 2,500 outlets in the country, and you can see that that's gone up. And in terms of a license, we have to roll out a number of outlets every year, and we're obviously with declining subsidies, we will need to look at whether we can still sustain the rate of increase, because you can see that that's had an impact of some 10%. And in fact, year to date as well, we've shown a further double-digit increase in those costs. Just to talk briefly about the balance sheet, I think this is a very, very positive sign that the balance sheet has continued to grow and it continues to perform healthily. Our total assets have increased by 8% year on year, which is very, very positive. Our reserves have also grown equivalent. Our net asset value is now over 2.3 billion rand. This is the positive reserves in the organization. We have cash and investments, which is mainly as a result of post-bank depositors of nearly 6.7 billion rand, and we're looking to unlock that value from the balance sheet as we corporatize the bank going forward. So a very, very strong position. The area that I talked about of concern is the employee benefits, which is a post-retirement medical aid subsidy, which has given us a liability on the balance sheet of some 1.2 to 1.3 billion rand, and that's an area that we'll be receiving focus in the current financial year. Just a couple of ratios, just very briefly. Return on assets is still very positive, although actually showing a decline during the year as a result of the lower profitability, and the cost-to-income ratio at 93.6%. So it's still relatively strong. I'll go through these very, very briefly. Our net asset value up by 15%. You can see that over the past 5 years, there has been a positive growth in NAV all the way through to around about 2.3 billion rand for the year. Group revenue continues to grow, although there's a slight decline in the current year of 1% to 5.9 billion. And the expenses, as I say, we've managed to keep very, very tight control of those, and we've only seen a very, very small increase in the total cost during the year under review. Profit before tax, I've mentioned, you can see the trend has been down in the last couple of years, mainly as a result of the economic environment. But still a positive performance and a positive profit contribution for the organization. The same from a trading profit perspective. This is the actual profits that are generated by our trading operations, and you can see that still 366 million, down only 30 million on the year before. So from a trading perspective, the organization is performing strongly. Our total asset growth, as I mentioned, up 8%, and you can see the trend is very, very positive there from a balance sheet perspective, and that has continued in the last financial year. So our assets to turnover has actually declined slightly. We're not as efficient in the current year, mainly as a result of the declining turnover during the year under review. The group solvency ratio, which is basically the reserves as a percentage of total assets, continues to improve, so the company is very, very solid and healthy from a financial perspective. Our depositors funds, you can see that continues to grow over 10% per annum over the last 5 years. So our post-bank depositors, you will know that we're the leading Mzansi account in the country, and that has continued, and you can see that we've had an 11% increase in depositors funds with the in the bank of 3.7 billion rand in the last financial year. From a CapEx perspective, we continue to invest significantly in the business. We mentioned, the CEO mentioned 550 million rand that we have invested in the current year, and you can see that's broadly the breakout, 115 million in IT, property in the infrastructure across the country of 230 million and other CapEx 12 million. So we're using the positive returns and positive cash flows to invest in the future of the organization. There's the CapEx over the last 5 years. You can see that it's well over 300 million from 421 million the year before. Obviously, in the current financial environment, we need to be a little bit more prudent and ensure that we invest in those capital expenditure programs that are going to generate a positive return for us. Group subsidy, you can see that we, over the last 2 years, we've received around about 300 million rand, of which we spent 300 million rand per annum, giving us 600 million, which we've invested and spent 435 million and carrying over 249 million. So the subsidy is being well used and using it for IT and also to fund our universal service costs. This is the area that I talked about from a PRMA liability. You can see that the liability has gone from 929 million in 2005 to 1.3 billion in 2010. So that's a significant increase. The main result of that is as a result of the medical increases in our Medipos, which is our medical aid scheme. And you can see that in the last financial year, there was a 22% increase in costs, in contributions by staff and by the company in terms of their medical costs. That has been the main driver and something that we will be focusing on. Just briefly on the subsidiary financial statements, both of them have been performing well. You can see that the CFG, which is our courier and freight group, generated a profit for the year, despite a very, very tough economic environment. The profit, a very small profit of 5.4 million, up from a loss of 34 million the year before, although there was a one-off adjustment of some 20 million as a result of a reversal of a lease provision in the books. But it's still, I think, a very healthy performance. DocEx continues to perform well, a small organization, a very, very niche market in the legal business from a courier perspective, but again, it also delivers healthy returns and revenues of 49 million and profit after tax of 5.6 million for the year. So both of our subsidiaries were profitable in the year under review. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair.
I think at this point we will allow for questions and then we will proceed on the last part later.
Thank you. Member Advocate Michael?
Not advocate, but thank you very much for the promotion. We should tell the right people. I think we all agree a very impressive performance by the Post Office. Very nicely presented to you. Thank you very much. It's very comprehensive and easy to understand. There's just a few questions that I have for you. Improving your IT and modernizing facilities. When you say modernizing facilities, I assume you are talking about simple things, and I'll give you a practical example. Binding machines, for example. Most post offices have a sign up saying this post office does the following: faxing, binding, laminating. And you'll find that a lot of the machines aren't there, they're gone, or the people in store, in the post office, don't know how to use these machines. So what is the system that you're putting in place to train people and to also make sure that you have the correct equipment? In line with that, being public representatives, a lot of our work deals with the public sending us queries, complaints, questions, and myself and my colleague, Mr. Van den Berg, are inundated with sometimes quite strange questions, but obviously we need to respond to people. In the past week, I've had 4 queries as to why post boxes have become so expensive. People have the general sort of theory that, you know, if a postman or a postwoman is not delivering post to their house, they in fact are doing a service to the post office by having a box. So I'm assuming that a lot of the cost is the actual occupation, the actual rental space for post boxes. But if you could just give me an explanation so that it's easier for us to respond to the general public, that would also be great. And another thing that we are regularly asked is access to fax machines that you have through the post office. The faxing costs are exceptionally high. It goes up to, in some post offices, $9.95 per page. So if you could just explain a bit of that to me as well, and you know, it would just help, it could help us report that. And then also, I saw the rollout in many post offices of an internet service center. But I don't see it happening in all post offices, and I think the immense importance of these internet service centres, especially in rural areas, it is so important. So could you just tell me where you are regards to that? And then also, I like this your whole values and mindset. I like what it stands for. But you still have very long queues in post offices. And it's still notorious for unfriendly staff. So have you got a human resource department that's actually working with that and doing training of staff to be more user-friendly, so to speak?
The real advocate, Dilang.
Doesn't help me much. I also want to add my voice to an entity within our stable, which I think we can be proud. A lot of the things they do are good. And not everything, but a lot of it. And I think we should encourage and keep on supporting this entity to make sure they do well. The one thing I want, it's difficult to debate something with you about your where you've gone backwards. Because you attribute everything to the economic downturn. Now, it's difficult to gainsay whether you're right or not. My worry is I would have expected that the economic downturn has been going on for much longer. And this year is the one where you're actually showing some results going backwards. And I'm wondering to what extent that is guesswork and to what extent you've actually really looked at whether it's the economic downturn. I mean, to what extent is there possible inefficiency, duplication, mismanagement that may account for some of that? It's a bit difficult to debate it with you because you just, we all know there's an economic downturn, but my sense of balance that I have just doesn't gel very nicely with it. It seemed to me you should have started earlier with the decline, but you've only done it this year and quite severely in some instances. So I really want to hear a bit about that because I don't want to next year sit here and see that it's going backwards even worse and it's actually other reasons than just the downturn. Of course, it is the downturn. I mean, the mail decline that you've shown clearly must have an impact. But there are other impacts as well. One of those, for example, is the post bank showing a red and not black. It was kind of worrying. So that's the other thing. The other thing that I find very strange is this page 3. You're accountable to the portfolio committee right at the bottom. But then the two strange ones, you're accountable to labor and you're accountable to employees. Now that I just find strange. I find it strange that it's part of your thinking, that you're accountable to employees. Of course, you're responsible for their well-being. But are you accountable to employees? And then if you look at your salary bill, that 50% of your expenses are to employees. Maybe it shows why you're accountable to employees. It's a mindset that I think may be affecting your bottom line quite severely. I know that you would probably try and avoid labor problems and give high increases and so on. But I do worry about this. I worry that a company sees itself to be accountable to its employees and accountable to labor, whatever that may mean. And I think you should explain it, specifically in light of your high salary bill. I mean, I must say I was stunned when I saw that a half of each cent is paid on labor. I was stunned. I mean, that's the case. I don't know what it looks like in other entities, but I've never seen anywhere something like this. And I wonder to what extent it's the mindset of management in terms of their employees that actually affects this bottom line. To try and keep labor stability and labor peace, to what extent we're going overboard with the salary packages. I'll give some others a chance to ask questions, Chair, before I ask him.
Thank you, Advocate. Honorable Sir.
Thank you, Honorable New Chair, and thank you, Chairperson of the Board. I also want to say farewell, Mr. Nick. We wish you all the best wherever you're going. If you will refer you to page 19 of the report you received, that on it you are saying, among others, recognizing on the top of your right, on page 19, including among others, recognizing and rewarding employees who go to great lengths to offer good service to our customers. I just want to check about this reward. Even if they are going great lengths on what they are doing, is it not a job that they are employed to do? Or what does that mean with that reward thing you are giving them? And on page 21, I think the universal service obligation to me is underfunded. And you still have an amount of 249 million for future utilization. If I can just find more clarity on that. And the other issue is on page 22. It's for my own understanding on that one, in terms of the operations, subsidizing the medical aid contributions of certain of its pensioners. Why is it certain? Maybe if you can get further clarity, why is it certain, not all other? Why the certain pensioners are chosen to be the one to benefit out of that? I like my story. Last thing, I see the bank is also part of the business that generates positive cash flow on your side. That my question would be, now that the Post Bank is going to be a standalone entity, how will this affect you as a SAPO? Thank you, Honorable New Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Van der Berg.
In regard to the question asked by Comrade Advocate, on note 11 of your report, on note 11 of your report, the overpayment by group. Maybe further clarity on that. Note 11 in this report. Let me check which page it is. I'll check it. It's page 114. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I must begin by congratulating you as the acting new chairperson. Otherwise, it will be the same as the first meeting when the Honourable De Lange jumped on my back because I didn't congratulate the chairperson at that time. But just a couple of general issues. I want to ask the CEO of the post office about safety issues in post offices. Because in the area where I stay, I can only talk about the area where I stay. It's in Discovery in Roodepoort. There was, I can't remember how many, but there was a couple of armed robberies at this small post office. And if you think about it, when the Post Bank is also going to operate in that same facility as I see it, maybe I'm wrong, safety will be a bigger and bigger issue because bigger and greater amounts of money will be handled in that specific post office. Also, the question of the amount of staff being on duty there. Sometimes it's only one person at the front desk, and it can take a long time, especially when people have got a lot of transactions they are doing. And you haven't got, for instance, half an hour to wait there. If you go to the post office, when you're on your way quickly, you just stop by the post office to do post a letter or whatever. So this is the thing. And another thing about safety is, especially when it's dark, it's not safe to go into your post box and open it because there's no lights or whatever to make you feel safer. It's impossible to make it so safe that nobody can get hurt or whatever. But I think this is a thing. It's dark, and you are not prepared to go alone. They just do quickly look if there is a letter you are waiting for some time. And then just a question, maybe I missed it, about lost mail. Have you improved on your record for delivering it all the time? And because there was a stage when the post office hadn't got a good name because of mail get lost. Thank you, Chairperson. This is a couple of questions. And then as the CEO know, my post office I'm waiting for in Toekomstrus for more than a year now, and I will keep on and asking for post office in Toekomstrus. Thank you, Chairperson.
I've noted you advocate there, Reverend.
Chair, can I just say that I don't know, Mr. van der Berg obviously missed the announcement, but they do have a suspect for the robberies at Discovery and Roodepoort. Hans is a short fellow with a trench coat with a big beard. And they suspect that he's a resident in the area, but I don't know if that's any truth.
What I would have done, Chairperson, I just want to take the post office team back to the presentation by the group Chairperson. There was a point made under opportunities to assert and exploit SAPO's leading role within the African continent. Are there opportunities for the post office to expand its services beyond the borders of the Republic? If there are, what are these? And then the group CEO, in addressing environmental plans, spoke about the fossil fuel usage baseline. Are there alternatives to the usage of petrol and diesel? If there are, what are the effects?
Thank you, Honorable Ben.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's two questions I'd like to ask regarding e-postal offerings. E-postal offerings, that's correct.
and extensions of e-postal offerings. What does that mean? Can you give me some more clarity on that, please? And then secondly, you spoke about the reduction of mail revenue. What are you doing to get around that? If you have, because I think the member from the Honourable DA was saying you have an internet service, and I'm not aware of that internet services, because, for example, in areas where people don't have internet connection or an internet address, what are you doing there? Will that, for example, if you should have an internet address in these rural areas, will that make up in for the reduction that you're experiencing now? So my question basically is, what backup system, or how can you make sure that the reduction isn't there, and how can more people get access to internet services? Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Master.
Chairperson, thank you. First of all, I just want to ask a simple question that has been asked for many, many years. I don't know whether something is done about the PXIs in the post office. Because PPIs, rather. The other way around. Because I can see they are still there and no one is utilizing them. I don't know what happens in all the post offices that I've gone to. On your report here, the other thing I wanted to ask is about the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. When you read it, to me, doesn't make any sense. I want to know, why do you put it under fruitless, wasteful expenditure? It says here the expenditures are made up of fines and penalties of the late payment of taxes. And can you explain why you? Yeah, and then I think what I wanted to ask actually here is about the finance costs on 31, but I think you can explain to us more about that, how it comes about that there is the indication here about the year 2010 and I mean 2009 and 2010. But I'm interested really in the, what you call them, PPIs. And I've never had anyone, we've got a post office in Parliament here. And if one goes there, you find so many mistakes there. But how do you monitor what this post office is doing, whether it is serving the purpose of being here in Parliament or not?
Thank you, Chairperson. And may I request that those who are going to respond, they might just respond to the question. No preamble.
Now, I'm just going to say the CEO and head team will respond to the
maybe before Chair, you come in, Advocate, just remember something.
I just missed the... What? Can I tell us something about the audit this year? I mean, is it was it a clean bill? Was it a qualified audit? What were the issues? I didn't see it. Maybe I missed it.
Honourable members, I will be assisted by the team today. Just starting from the first question that was asked about modernizing the post offices.
We just want to intervene right now. The other question is about the report of the Auditor General. It's not on the report. We want to know why is it so.
Modernizing the post offices, we are in fact going through in terms of the modernization of the post offices with a particular focus in making sure that
the equipment, the photocopiers, binders, faxes are installed in the post offices that we have had. We in this current financial year, we've managed to roll out now 300 to all the post offices, and we are going through a replacement of over 1,000 that we will go through, particularly to deal with the issues around how do we make sure that it is there. In our business model, when we looked at it, there is an ICT part that we have indicated that what we in fact want the post office to be is a one-stop shop, especially in the rural areas where people can be able to come in and do e-government services, they can do internet, they can be able to go through with that. For that program, we have had what Honorable Member was referring to as a public internet terminal, where people can come through and go into the public internet terminals that we have. We have over 800 in public internet terminals, of which that we have about 700 that are working. The model we had implemented around public internet terminals became too costly to maintain, and we currently are reviewing the total public in PICs in reviewing and putting up internet cafes within the post offices for us to be able to go through. We are hoping that that program will then be rolled out in the first quarter of the next financial year, that we go through and make sure that we can implement. I'll need to check the cost of the fix. It doesn't sound okay. I would need to really check that, because what we do, we really try and make sure that we become affordable, because we recognize that the people who utilize the post office will probably not be able to do that, so that I will take under advisement. The other issue around modernizing of the post office is one of the things that we spoke about is a lot of queries that you receive. We have this year gone through a process of making our call centers to be upgraded, to be able to allow people who can call in and to get quicker responses and going through. And there's another program that we are also building up in terms of our customer database for people who can go through for us. And so far we have done, we will be going through a consolidation and a rationalization of that, but we've done sectors of our call center upgrade to make sure that we can deliver that. Post boxes being expensive. What we do offer is a free delivery address on the streets that we deliver. There are areas that we cannot deliver. Where we can deliver, the box when you get it is paid for. Where we do not do street addresses, boxes are free. It is part of the license and it's part of the regulation. So when you get a second address, we term it a second address, it is a box address, but it means you choose to be able to go through with it. Now, in terms of the cost of the box, comparatively speaking, to other people who offer boxes within the country, we are in fact charging almost half of what they do in terms of boxes. So our boxes are in fact relatively affordable for us to go through for that. Long queues, we still experience very long queues in the post offices during social grant payments. From the first week to the 10th of the month, we experience long queues in terms of volumes of people who come into the post offices at that particular time to go through with. However, we've put in a process of trying to make sure that there is queue management, that dignity plan for people to come through and deal with it, and how we are going to go through. And also the issue of what you raise around the culture, the mindset around people coming in, whether they treat people with dignity. We in fact have started what we call a reinduction program within the post office, where we take our business, our induction program for the new people, and a reinduction of the current employees going through that process. But when you say you live the values of the post office, exactly what it is, what behavior should you then emulate? How are the things that we're going to go through? But in order to get people to be motivated, we need to be able to recognize the best performance in line with the values that we have. We also have gone through a customer excellence training that we are starting to implement as a whole within the organization, especially in our retail space, our consumer services, which is happening through our training institute. The chairperson indicated the learning institute. It is our training center that is going through with that. And in the report, we have indicated some of them, of the achievements that we've managed to get. I am going to answer some of the two questions, and I'll hand over to my colleagues to answer. One in terms of the accountability and the governance framework, advocate, Honorable Advocate Zilane, on the issues that you there. Maybe it is just a depiction, which is not correct. But what we are trying to say is that the accountability that we have is in fact to the shareholder for that. And we are trying to indicate, in terms of regulations, legislation, what really guides the governance framework. But also in terms of labor and employees, as management and leadership, our primary responsibility is to take care of the assets, the most precious assets we have as an organization, and this is our people. The supporters are very key to what we do. We are not held to account by them, but in the way that we manage and lead the organization has to be very employee-centric in everything that we do to ensure that we can be able to get them to be at the right place and they can, in fact, in turn, be customer-centric for the issues that we have. That, in terms of accountability, what we are saying is that we have formulated structures with labor that holds both of us and labor responsible for the actions that we take as an organization in terms of the programs that we have. So the mindset within the organization is not that we answer to labor, but we in fact sit down in a partnership that we go through. For our salary increases that has come through in terms of the salary bill, 50% is very high. Our target that we want to be able to go through, because we are a labor-intensive organization, is about 45%. That is our target in terms of our staff costs in relation to revenue. For us to be able to settle, we were here with the portfolio committee last year where we had to deal with a major problem that we had as an organization, which was called the salary anomalies, to remind the members on those issues. That, in fact, led to a major strike that we haven't had as an organization in the past 7 years, that led to that strike that we had where we lost about 2.5 weeks. And in terms of the monetary terms, it's over 140 million rand that we lost in terms of revenue that we got at that week. To deal with those issues, which are historic issues, we had to come in and make sure that we can, however, deal with the things that we need to do. I do accept that we still have inefficiencies within the organization, and some of the issues that we are looking at is exactly how do we make sure that as we pay people correctly, we do get the productivity up, we do make sure that the inefficiencies are high, and we can be able to get the staff ratios that we want going forward. Linked to this is a question around employee rewards and recognition that was referred to in the annual report. We in fact do have a reward and recognition process within the organization. We just come out of last week recognizing what we call performance stars of the organization. The performance stars are people who are voted in by their colleagues to say, as far as the values are concerned, as far as the work is concerned, it is above the call of duty. It is not where you come in every day and you do your work. If you do exceptional work, that is there. Let me give an example of the person who is a platinum winner of this year. The person is a branch manager, came in and realized that during social grants, most of the customers who are their social grants are in fact handicapped or disabled and they do not have wheelchairs. He has gone out of his way, went in and got partnerships, and as it stands today, has managed to get 10 wheelchairs for the customers that come to his branch to be able to do that. That is what we call a star performer. So it is above the call of duty. He is currently looking at saying, as just that individual, what else is he going to do to now the region in terms of the issues that you do? And those are the category of people that you do. It is essential that when you run an organization, that in order to get into a high-performing organization, you make sure that the star performers are recognized so that you encourage everybody else to come in and perform at the right level that they would need to perform on. And I think I will then hand over to the COO and the CFO and other colleagues to assist me with other questions.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, good morning. If I can answer some of the questions that was posed. The first one related to the e-postal offerings and extensions, and the Honourable Member was looking for examples. What we had indicated as far back as 2007 was that we wanted to create And the term we're using now is a digital business as part of our revenue diversification strategy. Integral to that is the ICT component that we've done a lot of work on, as well as e-postal. And during the course of this calendar year, we've brought those two units together. The kinds of products and services that we are bringing and intend to bring are intended, and an example of these are motor vehicle license renewals, they are traffic fine payments, they are the purchase of philately online, and we will continue to expand those products and services that we can place on the internet as a convenient solution. So I think, Honourable Member, those are some examples, but as time goes on, we will continue to expand them, and I hope that it gives some sense as to the kind of products that we're talking about in e-postal. In terms of what we're doing to offset the decline in mail, I think we face two challenges in the business sense. One is that the rate at which mail volumes and consequently the mail revenue is declining is at a greater rate than new revenue is replacing it, and that poses a challenge for us. One of the main reasons for that is while we have a monopoly in mail, in all of the other businesses, we face the headwinds of competition. Our competitors in areas such as banking, in areas such as logistics and digital, they have deeper pockets than us. They are only focused on a small section of the community, and we need to make sure that we prioritize our investments to serve the broader developmental agenda of the state, and consequently we are not able to invest in those kind of services at the rates that our competitors are able to. And therefore we've got a plan to diversify, but it's pretty hard yards for us balancing the need to meet our mandate and the developmental agenda and also invest significantly in systems and infrastructure to compete in a pure commercial space. So the business model that we put in place in 2007, I think, made it clear that we wanted to diversify, we wanted to extend in logistics to go into financial services. I think we are giving effect to that. We are battling in terms of a pure competitive space because we have some very tough competitors out there. But we will continue to work extremely hard, but it's pretty hard yard at this point in time. If I can address two other questions, one which the Honourable Member asked around safety in the post office. The presentation that follows this one, if it is taken, will indicate that in the areas of crime, the crime prevention initiatives we've put in place over the last year has seen a reduction across all five categories of crime, notably postal crime, financial, post-bank theft, and violent crime. So I think our crime prevention strategies are contributing to a reduction in crime, but we acknowledge with 2,500 outlets across the country, it is quite difficult to secure all of them, and we need to strike a balance between making them so secure that our customers cannot transact, but at the same time minimizing the risk to our customers. And it becomes difficult when we get armed robberies and robbers undertake a crime to make off with R100. It becomes very, very difficult to secure an outlet to that extent when people are willing to commit crime for R100. But I think we do acknowledge that when it comes to the corporatization of the bank, the issues around security and how we ensure that customers coming to the post office are protected when they undertake bank transactions and that the outlets themselves are secure, that is a key component of the corporatization program. But I think crime for us, We have shown improvement year on year, but the sheer reach that we've got means that there's always going to be a soft target somewhere, and the small amount that criminals are willing to steal makes it very, very difficult to be able to say we will stop crime completely, but we have seen an improvement over last year. I wish to assure the Honourable Member that the Post Office in Toekomsrus is on the plan for this financial year. The plans have been approved. I expect that construction will begin early next year, and that during 2011 the outlet in Toekomsrus should be delivered if we don't run into any problems. The final question that I just want to answer relates to fossil fuel baselining and are there alternatives. I think it's not a straightforward answer. There are two things that we're attempting to do. Where we use fossil fuels, what we would like to do is to move to smaller trucks so that they burn less fuel. The sheer extent of our network is such that in many areas there isn't a ready-made alternative to fossil fuels. The great distances we travel renders things such as hybrid and such as electric not feasible because of the ranges. Where it is feasible, we are looking at that, and during the course of this calendar year, we will be piloting in Gauteng electric scooters to see whether we can replace our existing petrol engine scooters with electric scooters. And if that does work, then necessarily, where it's feasible, we will. But I think we're following the two-track process. One is to reduce the average size of the engines that we use by moving to smaller trucks, and where it's feasible, to look at alternatives such as electricity. The sheer size of our country makes some of those things not feasible because of the distances we travel. Honourable Chair, if I may at this point in time hand over to the CFO to deal with the questions in relation to finances.
Thank you. I'll just deal briefly with the financial questions. The question on subsidy, there is $249 million carried over. That is going to be used for IT investments in our network upgrade across the country. And we anticipate that we will be placing the orders before the end of this year. It takes a little bit longer, obviously, because it's a significant capital investment program, and obviously from a governance perspective, we need to make sure we're going to be generating the necessary returns on those investments. So it takes a little bit longer to process, but we do anticipate placing the orders shortly. The question on the medical aid and the fact that certain of our pensioners are entitled to a subsidy. We reached agreement with the Communication Workers Union in 2003 that no new employees would get the subsidy. So in other words, the employees that were entitled to it at that time, obviously we couldn't stop, they were pensioners, so we continued with our subsidy, but all new employees who have joined after that period are no longer entitled to the subsidy. What that does is it ring-fences it, but obviously still with the inflation, growth in medical inflation, there's still seen an increase. But over time, obviously, that will come down because no new staff are entitled to it. The impact of Postbank as a standalone entity, I think it will be a challenge for the organisation. What we anticipate is that from a structural perspective, we will have a holding company, or the mothership, we call the post office, and then we will have Postbank and the courier businesses. Post office will charge the Postbank a fee for the use of its infrastructure. So post office owns the network, owns the infrastructure, and will levy a charge on its subsidiaries for the use of that infrastructure. So I think that's key from when we corporatize it, that's how the post office will generate a lot of its income. And obviously then also as a result of dividends, hopefully, we hope the post bank will be profitable and that there will be dividends paid to the holding company, which is the post office. The question on Note 11, I think it's not an overpayment, it's a prepayment where we actually pay in advance for services. So we actually show it as an asset in the books and obviously impair it over a period of time. So it's a prepayment. And not an overpayment. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure relates to 146,000 relates to late payment of rates and taxes on properties in the Eastern Cape and in the Free State. Late payment of municipal accounts in those areas. The finance costs are the costs that we actually pay our depositors. Obviously, if they invest in Postbank, we obviously pay an interest on the money that they invest with us, and that's what the finance costs are in the income statement. The question on the auditor's report, it is in the annual report, page 80. There's a complete report by our auditors. You will notice that it is unqualified. We've had an unqualified audit report for the last 5 years now. We don't get a letter from the Auditor General. We are actually audited by external auditors, Deloitte and Kobodo. They are our joint auditors. And they have given us a clean audit opinion for the year under review. Thank you.
There are just a few. On the chairperson's comment on the African continent and the advisory services that we were referring to. For honourable members to note that, in fact, within the African continent, as South African Post Office, we in fact occupy a very leading position. And we have strategically decided that within Africa and globally, South African Post Office will take a place that is recognised. But let me talk about Africa, for example, in terms of the programs that you're talking about, because primarily we talk about advisory services. Where, for example, if you take our address rollout program that we currently have,
African countries have the same demographics and the same geographical issues that we have, where we do not have street names, where we do not have roads, where we do not have that. But what we have managed to do in our address rollout is to be able to give an address with a GPS locator that allows not only the postal services, but also allows other emergency services that might happen within, that might be needed by people as a whole. And through that process, we have managed to get it accredited at the Universal Postal Union to be recognized as a proper addressing format for countries that have the similar issue that we have. Now, what we have found out is that what we have seen is a request from a lot of requests from African countries to come in and us helping them in setting up partly that address rollout issue. Secondly, around their infrastructure rollout, because they may not be able to do that. And one of the issues that has come up quite closely and within SADC is around looking at a money transfer program. As we know that within the SADC region, there's a lot of migrant laborers that go through. As post offices, we've always had a product we call money orders or postal orders. Now, money transfer, we are looking at an electronic money transfer system that can be implemented within the SADC region, that as postal operators we can exchange and look at those. There are obviously regulatory issues that we need to deal with each and every country, and that's some of the programs that we are looking at. When we look at the programs, we present them in a forum of the SADC ministers of communications in the SADC area, and we present them, and they are then adopted. A few programs are adopted as the SADC programs that are going to be done. And we are also trying to see if we can get funding from other sources, from the UPU, as we're doing one of the of our programs, which is the regional transport, with funding from the UPU as SADC, and other funders that will be able to deal with it. So we believe that there is possibility. I do need to also indicate that the board through the chair has indicated that comes in what we call an Africa strategy about what the post office should be and how we are going to go through with that. And it may not exclude going into looking at other postal operators, but at this point in time, we are just looking at the services that we have. There were other two issues that were asked around oversight and monitoring. For example, in the post office here in Parliament, that a lot of other things. Mr. Mnisi has, as a head of Communal Consumer Services, we in fact did not have an oversight and monitoring unit, which we implemented last year in that. And I should say, most of the time when we came to Parliament, we would hear honourable members saying, you know, in my office this is not happening and this is not right. And we identified this is not the right way to do business. The oversight unit is spread across the country. They visit post offices and in fact we check them weekly about what it is. And some of the revelations that are coming out and some of the issues are helping us in putting in continuous improvement. Out of that, we started now standard operating procedures that people need to know. We now need to be able to say, how is the customer service in this issue where there's an independent, like a mystery shopper who comes in and checks what the issues are and go through with that. And what we did is that we then implemented what we call a branch recognition program. So the star branches, like you see in other retail spaces, if it's a star performing, they would get a recognition for that branch and they would hold that trophy for the time period that they perform quite well. And it's for them to make sure that they deal with it. So we are working on that program and it just started on the things that we do. And that is why I spoke about continuous improvement. There is also a question that was asked about e-postal offerings. Honourable members, I was going to deal with it in the next presentation because in the next presentation we will show you some of the diversification that we are going to go through for. But in fact, the post office does provide email addresses as per our license to citizens. And we intend to roll out and go through a program through the schools, the rural areas, to really accelerate the offering of email addresses for people to make sure that we can be able to do that. But in order for us to give email addresses, we have to recognize that we need to have an IT infrastructure that will be able to cater for the email addresses that we are going to roll out, and hence the IT infrastructure investments that we are currently making. And when we do go out, we will then be announcing that.
Chairperson. Thank you. I think in conclusion, just to highlight, I mean, I think the question has been covered, but what we've asked management is to say we are supporting African countries outside of us as Africa as well, in terms of South Africa. We are hosting the office of the Southern African Operators Association, SAPOA, within the post office. So we've got people coming from different parts of our continent coming to our learning center, and we also are piloting the program on behalf of the UP. So what we've asked management and support is to say, let us move beyond just supporting. Let us come up with a business case where that support now is linked with us doing business. On the other level, just two issues I want to highlight. I also want to agree with the honorable members in terms of the concern going forward. I mean, on as far as the results are concerned, we have recognized, I mean, the attribution to the economic crisis, but also as an organization broadly, we are not sort of using that as an excuse. We have gone further because we do, I mean, acknowledge some of the inefficiencies that we are seriously having to deal with. We've come up with a very clear strategy that forms part of, because a turnaround situation is not a once-off. It's a journey. You continue, you go through experiences, and you discover certain things. And we've presented this to the shareholder, where we focus on, as part of that consolidation, particularly the CFG and services consolidation into one company, because we are bleeding in some of those, because it also begins to pull the transport network as part of those efficiencies. Unfortunately, because of the changes in administration, that project has really struggled, and it has been difficult for us to get finality. We are hoping at this point that we'll come to a point of conclusion, because it has a serious impact in terms of our business. So at a different level, in March next year, we will come to Parliament and we'll present this turnaround strategy, or the continuation as far as that is going from a sustainability and growth perspective. I would like to just say the issue of salary, the salary bill, is a very complex one, particularly because we continue to be challenged at a management level, because our salaries are lower. I mean, we've done benchmarks, and they've shown us. And it is not just about the benchmarks and the results. We are experiencing problems with our management constantly coming to us and saying, you have to this offer, what's the word? You have to counter this offer. And it continues to be a challenge, because every time, you know, out there, they are worth more. So at ourselves, I mean, that's another thing that we'll be presenting next year in terms of the whole HR portfolio and how we deal with that going forward, looking at the challenges that we're experiencing. Lastly is the area of monitoring. I mean, the IT network upgrade, the question has been answered, but I just want to say we've put in a lot of money as part of the IT platform. And if honorable members will remember when we had the Sasol shares, there was an outcry, the whole country, the post office was not performing. There were problems, there were long queues. We've had three shares after that. We've done very well. The Vodacom, the MTN, Zakhele this year, and the South African Breweries. And you have not heard anything about the inefficiencies of the post office at an alarming rate. That has performed very well. So it just shows our investments are being prepared. But lastly, we need to come again and discuss this issue I referred to earlier of the legislation and policy. Because we've got situations where our numbers, I mean, the next slide that the CEO and the CFO will show will indicate that. The issue of us being a service delivery arm of government and signing memoranda of understanding in terms of delivery of certain services has been challenged in court from a competition perspective. And from our side, and that has affected some of the business that we do, including grants, where we had to stop. And that business, I mean, we're beginning to see the impact in terms of, and it's not just at that level. So we just need a clear ruling, not just from a court perspective, but also from a government and shareholder perspective, in terms of how do we deal with some of those and how do we conduct business going forward. Because some of these are having implications, because there's indecisiveness
in terms of how government moves forward in relating to the post office, and that is having a serious issue on our bottom line. So I'm going to hand over to the CEO just to conclude quickly, Mr. Chair, if you allow.
Thank you on that issue. On the issue of the subsidy, we have in fact taken several steps when the issue of the subsidy reduction came through. The Honourable Member is quite correct. The USO is quite underfunded. We also do not claim the full cost of USO from government on the issues that we have. And in terms of the processes that we are going to deal with is to make sure that on our new subsidy issues going forward, we are continuing and getting that correctly. Chair, we can quickly go into two or three slides of this one.
Yeah. Advocate Dylan, why just under extreme pressure of time?
I think that the chairperson needs to unpack what he just said now a bit more. I hear what he's saying, but I don't understand what he's saying. It seems that there's something wrong with our legislation that doesn't let them fulfill certain tasks. Now, if that is so, we're busy amending that legislation. We better hear what the problem is so we can amend the legislation. So I hear what she's saying, but I just don't understand it. I hear that also there's court cases that have ruled, it seems that there's a monopoly of some sort. Now, I think we need to get some clarity on that issue so that we're very clear as we're moving forward this legislation that we've dealt with all issues, Jeff.
Briefly.
I think that issue might need, when we thought we were going to bring it actually today when we discussed the bill. So that's why I was not going into it in detail. Also because, you know, So from that perspective, I thought, but I mean, we are highlighting it and we don't want to deal with it specifically in terms of a particular case. So we're very cautious about it, but we'd like to deal with it as a strategic principle issue that requires attention, because it might not just affect one case, it might affect others. I know it's a frustration to the Honourable Members, but I'm not sure from a time perspective how I deal with that, because, I mean, I'm myself wanting to unpack it very seriously, but I'm not sure from a time perspective whether you allow us or we find time. We're hoping to do that during the post-end bill. It's one of the things we wanted to specifically deal with.
No, I think in terms of the deal, we'll finalize the deal around the first quarter of next year. So if there are issues which are linked to the bill, indeed, when we deal with the bill or before we deal with that, we have to know the issues, because we cannot continue with the bill whilst there are issues which have impact in the operation. And the bill which you are currently dealing with does not address those particular issues and so on. So it's a matter that I was going to say, because earlier you raised the issue of article of association where it limits people to two terms the executive. I would thought that at one point we have also to deal with the issues holistically, so that we understand it, whether it's a normal practice and the other things. So I think we'll have some opportunity before we finalize, even go to the bill, because now we have raised the issue. Before we continue the bill, we have to start on the issues we are raising and deal with those issues. Then we can continue the bill, because we don't want to deal with a bill which does not address the issues which you are having or your concern in terms of your operation. So I think we are going to help in that manner.
Honourable Chair, we will try and deal with the overview for now. In the spirit of time, we'll probably move on quickly. The others, the slides are available. How we have done the issues of our overview is going through the business and the key performance indicator for Honourable Members to be able to see and to take it from there. And trading conditions continue to be challenging. However, what we have done and what we've now done as management is to really look into further efficiencies, further cost containment, and making sure that we can be able to go through with. In terms of the prime interest rate, we have seen a decline of 350 basis points in terms of the numbers. It is above 100 million that's going to have an impact. Mail volumes continue to decline. And just to deal with the issues around the economic decline that we need to go through is, the CFO indicated earlier on that the GDP growth and the mail volume growth are the same. So when we look at the economic downturn, we look at its impact on the mail volume. But if you look at other factors that might impact deal with the issues of performance, interest rate is a major issue that we look at. Efficiencies are issues that we need to be able to go through with. And I think for us, what has happened, and I think the CFO has indicated, the PRMA liability, which we are not just taking that it is something that we need to do. We are looking at ways and means that we can keep on reducing it further, despite the challenges and the constraints that we have. Is a major challenge of what is it that we do. And if you look at those issues and you take them out, you'd realize that the performance of the post office still continues and continues correctly. Overview, as of September, if you compare to last year, we have an increase of 3%, expenses increase of 6%, and we have an operating profit with a decline of 39%. We are currently sitting September 2011 on 38 million. And you can see that the increase in the post-retirement is at 301%, and therefore a major decline on that issue. However, we have put into place other major issues that we need to go. Our peak period is coming towards the end of the year, and we will then have another peak period just before March, and we hope that we will be able to deliver better numbers than what the forecast is looking at now. For USO, we continue in terms of adverse rollout, and that's just an indication in terms of the color coding, green meaning that we're okay. The red one meaning Eastern Cape, where we are quite behind in terms of schedule where we are sitting, and we are looking at ways that we can be able to improve that and make sure that it happens. The Amber one, even though it is coming up okay, we still want to be at this point at the 50% or above 50%. So we keep on monitoring this all the time. Retail outlets, this shows the spread of retail outlets that we have now, and this shows the new and reserved outlets that we have done in this particular year. New outlets, total number of new outlets actually to date is 11, and total of upgrades that we have done in this particular year is 20. I just wanted to indicate and show the honourable members what it is that we mean by revenue diversification. The reality is that once you lose a customer who has been on mail and one of your major accounts decides to send emails or to send SMSs, that business is not coming back. So you need to replace it with alternatives that we have. The chairperson has just indicated the social grants performance. We started the social grants, and we've been seeing, as you see, after 2008, to 2009, a huge performance that we have. We currently are sitting at 76 million. In terms of our projection, we would have been a little bit far with the social grants performance, but we will continue with it. Motor vehicle performance has come in as a very, very, motor vehicle license renewal performance has come in as a very, very, very good program that we have. Together with the Department of Transport, we've made post offices accessible for renewal of rail licenses. And as you can see, that it's had a steady increase on that. We are currently sitting at 45 million compared to a full year of 2009 and 66. So as we keep on diversifying and putting in new projects, we are dealing with, we are seeing new revenue streams coming into the post office. And we continue to look for those to make sure that the revenue as it goes down on mail, we have a substitution that we can have. Hybrid mail performance, this is where we're talking about our e-postal service offering. In our e-postal service offering, we do box online. On the motor vehicle or licenses, we also allow you to look at the online issues. And at the back of our office today, at the back of the room today, we in fact want to have the honorable members take a picture so that you can be able to have a new offering that we have done, where we've introduced and launched at the last year thing, a personalized stamp that you can have, that you do, and you honorable members can do. This is aimed at, in fact, exciting the youth around, philately exciting the youth and looking at innovation that we can be able to do, but also personalizing those. So the personalized thing doesn't have to be your picture. It can be a company logo, and so it can be used as a marketing tool in terms of the communication that companies want to be able to put out. The face is yours. Nobody else can ever use it for you. It stays yours. That stamp stays yours. That didn't come out right. Chair scheme performance. The chair indicated the chair scheme performance that we have had. And this is just what we have managed to get. As you see, We have had in 2008, I think, most of the test schemes that we did, and yet today does not include the full amount of what we have managed to do this year with the MTN. And we believe those are some of the revenue schemes that we have. And I think with the test schemes, we have come to a point that, in fact, when people are looking for partnerships with test schemes, the post office is, in fact, a default partner for that, and we are quite proud of that of that issue. In terms of philatelic exhibition, we are very thankful because the cabinet having approved our program for STEM till 2012, we have issued all the STEM for 2010, and we are up to date. We have just held the 2010 Joburg International STEM Show, which was very, very successful, attended by 45 countries. That, in fact, indicated the value of STEM as we go through. I've spoken about the first personalized STEM. And also what we have launched this year, the COO referred to, is Philately Online, where we now are starting our e-commerce platform, where you can now order things online and be able to do so. People who want to get STEM, they can be able to do that. But of a very mighty thing that we have managed to do with the philatelic unit this year is that we have managed to be put into the Guinness Book of Records of achievements together with Hatfield College, which was done in 2 weeks ago, where we sat down and went through in building that mosaic at the top with the Union Building in the background with a Sunny High skyline, where we have managed to do that and beat the current record that sits and held by Leibniz Institute in Germany by over 60%. But more importantly is that it took Germany 3 years to build their mosaic. It took us less than a month to build a size that is 60% more than what they have done. And I think that's a very, very achievement that we have. We worked with young students from Hatfield College, 70 of those from the underprivileged areas who have come in and looked at STEMs and are quite interested in those issues. And I just wanted to indicate some of the issues in STEMs and looking at the stadiums and the World FIFA Cup stadiums that we have, right? The issues around the crime prevention progress, the COO had indicated that as you see with spending the years, as we go through in terms of the spending of the years, you can see the performance of it, and we do. We are quite concerned about the second one and the third one, which is financial and post-bank. As you see, we are at half a year. Even if you project it, it doesn't, if you double it, it doesn't. But we are just concerned about the improvements that has not come through as well as it wanted to. But what we have done, honourable members, in terms of crime, we had also put in CCTVs and access control systems in most of our centres so that we can deal with the issues of male crime. Employment equity and BE spend, we achieve our target. In terms of BE spend, our target is 60%. We are currently sitting at 57%. And the issues around training and development continue to perform very well. And in terms of other programs, especially human capital programs that we have, not only with SAPOA do we do the issues of postal operators only, we also have a sports academy where together with other countries we've just held a competition within Namibia where employees of the postal interact and they can be able to do that. We have coordinated efforts and are talking about their performance stats. One of the issues that we are managing very closely is the issues around lead liability because the reduction of that will in fact improve our performance going forward. I am not going to get into that. That shows you what we talk about when we talk about environmental sustainability, how we measure, what is it that we measure, and we measure this on a month-to-month basis. And since we started with the baseline on different years, you can see the performance coming down in terms of what we're doing, in terms of rationalization and issues that we have. The COO has indicated the issue of the electric scooters that we have. We have also started an energy efficient program within Sony May, and we continue with our food and food for Africa to make sure that we plant trees to make sure that we sequestrate carbon emissions that we do. I think it is of importance that you also mention one thing just before I close. It is around corporate social investment, but of importance for me is the last bullet that talks about employee volunteerism. We started an issue of employee volunteerism within the organization where employees are encouraged to get into their communities and work with communities and deal with some of the programs that they have in line with our CSI strategy. We have now 31 programs that are going through the country as a whole where employees take their own time, dedicate their own resources to uplift the community that they live in one area or the other. mainly looking at poverty, HIV and AIDS, and how we do that. And I think this is one thing that the post office employees and the post office spirit, you know, we call it the Kapoan spirit, comes out in how we live our values. This is an indication of one of the things that we had the board to partake in a Zano Kanyo that we just did last week at in Western Cape. And during this time, we also managed to raise a lot of money that we will now be able to build a house for the Zano Kanyo, which is a lady who takes care of more than 40 kids who are in the area who do not have areas support in one way or the other. And we believe that these are very, very good people who really need to require a lot of help to can go through. And it's just one of the programs, as I indicated, that we have about 31 of those. I will just try to also hand over to the CFO to finalize the performance of the current year.
Maybe before the CFO comes in, members, we must deal with the report which we have started with in the morning. The report is here. Then we'll proceed to the second part of the report. You know the process of Parliament, even if we agree, but we have to read so that it goes on record and the other things. The report reads as follows. Report of the Portfolio Committee on Communications on the Final Act of the International Telecommunications Union, Plenitude of Potentiary Conference, Antalya, 2006, tabled in terms of section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution of 1996, dated the 2nd November 2010. The Portfolio Committee on Communication, having considered the final act of the International Telecommunications Union, Plenipotential Conference, Antalya 2006, tabled in terms of the section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution of 1996 recommends that the House approve the final act of the International Telecommunications Union Plenipotentiary Conference at China 2006 and the report to be considered by the House. Do we agree with the report? Comrade John?
Just check something. I asked this question last time. Is it the act that we have to pass, or is it a resolution we have to pass of things in the act? Because I think it makes a difference how you word it. And I thought last time they told me it's a resolution. So I didn't need clarity. I don't have any problems with it. I just want to make sure that we're passing the right thing. Those acts are binding on them. Those acts will be binding on the country.
I think that the wording, that what we call resolution, they call it the final act. But it's the resolution. The final acts are the resolution. So in our context, we'll be saying the final resolution, but they call it act.
Right?
Agreed.
Apologies, Chair, we're just trying to make the presentation a little bit shorter so that we can close. Just to talk a little bit about the yesterday performance. I think the encouraging thing is that we're starting to see the benefits of our diversification kicking into the revenue. Although we've only got a 3% overall increase, and that's mainly as a result of the mail revenue, which is flat year on year. So 1.7 billion versus 1.7 billion last year. You can see the encouraging trends in the other businesses. Logistics is up 8% year to date. Financial services is up 15%. Postbank revenue is up 15%. We've seen a further decline in the interest rates, unfortunately, which has shown a decline there. But you can start to see the benefits of the diversification strategy impacting our revenue and starting to offset the flat mail revenue for the year. The logistics side, and you can see that I did mention that this is a combination of CFG and Speed Services Courier. We want to legally integrate them, but at the moment, from an operational perspective, we do report them jointly. You can see that the revenue is up 10%, And the operating profit is up 59%. So we're seeing a nice improvement in our courier, in our logistics business. The balance sheet continues to grow. I did dwell on this last time in the annual report, but just to show that we are continuing to see strong balance sheet performance for the year to date. We would just remember that the first 6 months of the financial year is a quiet period. We start to see the business really take off now from October as people, as all our retailers start to post their mail for all the Christmas specials and things. You'll see a lot more mail coming into letterboxes, and that really does boost our revenue. This is also the year, the time of year when we renew our everyone has to renew their post boxes. So you see a lot of upside from a post box revenue perspective. So the first 6 months quiet, the second 6 months very strong. Capex, we have spent 240 million from already this year. Actual is 85 and committed another 154 million. Although it will be down on last year because of the lower performance from a trading perspective. This one is the subsidy allocation, and you can see that the MTF is showing a decline in subsidy from 306 million to 180 to 52, and thereafter zero. We have mentioned this before that we will see some challenges in servicing our universal service costs in terms of our license. A total cost of nearly 400 million rand per year. And we have actually proposed to the Department of Communications that we keep the subsidy at around about the 300 million rand per year mark to service some of the USO costs. And we're hoping that we can motivate and lobby that in the next MTF period that's coming up in the new financial year. Subsidy, we've spent 306 million, and we've actually received 306 million. We've utilized 128 million year to date. We've changed our rationale now. We don't use it to fund CAPEX projects. We generate the CAPEX out of our own cash flows. What we do is we actually recover our USO costs against subsidy, and that was presented and accepted by the shareholder. That slide's already been shown. I think the last slide I'd like to dwell on in the interest of time is to look at our year-end estimate. Currently, we're estimating operating profit of 156 million rand this year, and also another burden in terms of our medical aid subsidy, which is going to be around about 300 million, which is impacting the bottom line performance. We will see a net profit. We're anticipating a net profit at the end of March next year of around about 91 million. We obviously have a lot of programs in place to improve that. There's a lot of efficiency programs in place. You can see that the impact, our expenses are only forecast to go up by 6%, which I think is not bad in the current environment. The impact is obviously on the revenue. And we're trying to accelerate those revenue diversifications to improve that picture going forward. Thank you very much.
I think in closing, the honourable members asked us what exactly is it that we're looking at. I think for us, revenue programs, we're going to accelerate those issues around expenses and efficiencies that we are going through. That with some of the programs that we've put into place, some of the automation that we are doing within the mail business, we do foresee a strategy of reduction of our mail centres and depots in bringing in efficiencies. We have now presented, and it was approved by the board, a multi-channel strategy for our consumer services. In dealing with the issues of just the rollout and also how we can make more of our services more accessible to people as we go through. We have started in this month to go through and make sure that we monitor and we make sure that as we go through towards the end of the year and during our peak periods, our cost doesn't in fact go out of kilter and we can be able to come out with a number that is still more acceptable as we go forward. Chair, if you do allow me to do that, I think as the CEO, I really, really want to thank Mr. Buick, who's still with us, but I just want to really thank him for the time that he has spent. And I think in terms of the executives within the post office, he's probably one of the, in the room, one of the people who started at the billion rent loss and came in the organization at a very, very difficult time. He had the organization financially to a performance. We really did not like him very much because he's very concerned about cost containment. And we know that, in fact, even with our approval processes, it is an issue that we do. But not only that, restructured our balance sheet as we sit now. There are still one or two items that are left in terms of what we need to do for us to be standing here today and really delivering the performance that we had.
And having gone through this process and very, very challenging time, I would like to say as a CEO to Mr. Buick, thank you very much for the time that we have spent and for the value that you have added to the post office. And as the chair has indicated, the competencies that he has, we are not going to let it go quite easily. So we will be looking at it and making sure that we deal with it from that perspective. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you, members. Honourable Seven.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I thought in the second presentation we will also hear about the investigation plan. My interest will be on the 3,453 as stated in the report. Because maybe just a matter of mathematics from myself, because I'm not a mathematician, but numbers doesn't add to me. Because here you are reporting about the 148 disciplinary inquiries, of which 122 were handed over to the police, 67 were employees. What happened to the rest of the numbers? It's page 76 of your annual report. So I thought it was also part of this. We have further clarity on those investigations. The other, just for my interest, because I'm from Northwest, I hear the CEO explaining the colors on the slide number, I think it's 68. You said the green is the K, red is behind, but not just it's yellow. What does yellow mean? That's where my interest is. Again, on slide 8, maybe just, it's also my personal interest from that province and as a deployee in that province. I can see other provinces in terms of number, the YTD, the actual, the difference, and numbers. But in terms of numbers, it's 0000000 from the start to the end. Maybe we are not receiving services, we are not servicing us. It's on class 8, there is something about. Yeah, I think you are not servicing us. I don't know, maybe you can explain that to me. Thank you very much.
On slide 8, let me start with the atrocities, yeah? In terms of new, of the new and upgrading officers, what we are showing is the actual to date. The COO has indicated that we've now taken an approval to the board, and by the end of March, we will be rolling out. So as of the date that we had not done with them, we had not as yet rolled out any new outlets into the Northwest or upgraded any. But in terms of the Northwest, there is only one province in terms of our outlets that we have in the country that is fully serviced, and that is Northern Cape. So within Northern Cape, we'll be looking at not new outlets, but relocation and upgrade. So Northwest, I do not have the numbers, but I think it is within the programs that we have. So when we come into the end of the year, there will be a number that is there out on there. Yellow means we are not doing as well as we should. Like I indicated, we should now be sitting at about 50%. So this is how we measure ourselves, that we just at half year, we should try and be able to sit at that. And red, we are indicating that the lack of performance onto that. On the security issues that you raised, that is on the annual report. Okay. Disciplinary cases where we would have 348, those disciplinary cases would be cases that would start up with a crime or an alleged crime or fraud issue that would come through. Through the disciplinary cases and the evidence that's provided, some of them would be indeed crime and fraud, some of them may not be. And therefore, the ones that are, we then report them to SEP for further investigation, and that is why the number would be different. For example, someone will come in and say, in my post bank, 400 rand has been taken out. Whoever was the teller would be investigated on that issue. It might be found that it was not taken out by the teller. It may be just people that have used it externally and other things, and they may not know. For example, you'd have people who would give out their PIN numbers to others, and therefore they would withdraw that. So we may have started the process because evidence may have indicated that. We go through a process, and when people are not guilty, that the evidence and the outcome of the disciplinary case may be that, others may not be. Others may be the less, but it says through the process, you go through that, and out of those ones, the ones that we need to recover and report to SEPT, 122 were then reported.
Maybe what you can do, CEO, is to send out the clear explanation, because you are talking about the numbers that they don't add up. You know, the explanation of the shortfall, what happened. But maybe you can help, because you might not be having the full information now, the detailed one, that you can send us the information so that you will understand, so that next time when you come, we can be able to check on that particular matter, if that is possible. Maybe within a week, if you can. Just send us the information, then we'll pass it to the members to look into that. With that, maybe we must also congratulate, I'm not sure whether to congratulate or thank the outgoing CFO on the work which he has done. We know the post office, which situation it was and where it is now. We hope that we are not going to lose you within the sector. You remain within the sector because as we've developed as an individual, as a country, also have developed the skills and expertise from what we've been gaining all these years. So we need those skills back to be implemented within our economy so that we are able also to strive to the best like the other economies. So we hope you'll be around. We wish you well in your new endeavors. If you do have, we might see you in SAPO again. Who knows? You might be there. Thanks very much, both of you. But once Nemisa is coming, how do we deal the issue of the photo? Do members go there and do it so that members individual can go there and take their photos and so on? Once Nemisa is busy, we don't break for that particular.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say that it would be nice for you to be there all the time, simply because we didn't get tough questions from you today. So we are happy that you are paralyzed with the chair.
I was talking to the committee secretary that you see the problem here, you have to manage the time. It's better here.
Thank you so much.
We were fired by the post office to get you there.
Members. Nemisa is a very small entity. I hope their presentation will follow their size so that we don't have challenges. But welcome, Nemisa. You have changed a lot. Too many new faces and so on. We have to do a thorough introduction so that they will know who's here and so on. Over to you.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, yeah, it is correct to say that there have been a number of changes in the composition of the board of NEMISA and its executive management. My name is Tidiso Tavase. I'm actually acting as chairperson at the moment. And then next to me, we've got a chief executive officer. I think the last time we came to make a presentation, we had an acting chief executive officer. But Mr. Ndibosani Chizumba has been appointed now as chief executive officer. and he's going to make part of the presentation, although he was not with us for the full year. And then next to him is Mr. Zakilana Ngwedzumba. He's our new chief operating officer. He's replacing Mr. Vuyo Makaya, who was acting as the chief executive officer and also chief operating officer. And then further on, we've got Moira Makalalaka. She's our, she's also the new chief financial officer. The previous chief financial officer left at the end of her contract, and she preferred not to renew it. And then Hulisani Muboni, he's the new company secretary. And then I think behind me, I've got Mr. Haisiwe Dinemba, and he's a new member of the board, and he also chairs the audit committee. And then next to him is Tulo Hong. She's also a new member of the board, and she chairs the human resources committee. And then next to her, Dinki Duve, who's a member of the HR committee. And then finally, Lashang Somo, who's part of the audit committee. So we'll continue then with the presentation. Okay. I think just the mandate. I think we've just emphasized only because, going forward into the 2011-2012 year, these are the issues, the mandate that we will be pursuing, and which is mainly to create a vibrant ICT sector that ensures that all South Africans have access to affordable and accessible ICT services in order to advance socio-economic development goals. And this would, the goal is being to accelerate the socio-economic development of South Africans by increasing access to as well as updated usage of ICTs through partnerships with businesses and civil society within the three spheres of government. And maybe just one more thing is that this is our 10th year of operation. So NEMISA is 10 years old.
When are we celebrating? Where?
No, not well. I think maybe perhaps if we look at the statistics, you can see, maybe this is over the past 10 years, and the 2,500 students, these are permanent students who have been trained over the past 10 years. There are additional students who have been trained, but these are short-term courses, and those are not included here, and there would actually be much more than the 2,500 on the short-term courses. And then just the current student coverage at the moment, you can see that most of the provinces, actually all the provinces are represented, and there's a fair balance between males and females. I will now hand over to Mr. Kizumba to continue with the performance.
You are protected because Northwest is also here.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will ask the COO to do the performance. We ask for a 5-minute clip that we have organized just to show the honorable members what our students are producing and what kind of product are we taking out from NEMISA to the communities.
Chairperson and the Honorable Member. And we thank you for your time that you've given us to take you through our annual report for 2009 and 10. The video clip that we just showed you gives you an indication of the end product that informs the inputs that go into that. So I'm going to take you through the inputs that are required to achieve the results that you saw in the video. From the annual report 2009-10, the performance objectives, as you will see in the text that you have, starting with governance. And governance for a training institute like ourselves deals mainly with ensuring that the basic elements that give learners mobility when they exit the institute are set and established and maintained. And in our case, it's a question of accreditation, it's a question of them getting certification from the relevant ETQAs. In our case, it is the MedCita that does the accreditation and certification. So we've got a number of programs that have been submitted, that have been accredited through MedCita. And we've got, obviously, as you would know, challenges between ourselves internally regarding the maintenance of the status of accreditation, as well as problems that arise out of, you know, challenges within MedCita. But as stakeholders who have an interest, a common interest, we are working very hard to ensure that those challenges are dealt with. The other challenge with regards to how we retain learners in terms of the provisioning that supports their stay in the MISA is also one of the things that you will see that affects, you know, our ability to retain these young learners. You know, issues around how you fully resource. In terms of our mandate, you will remember that we are required to choose learners from disadvantaged backgrounds, the poorest of the poor. And that has its own challenges in terms of how the institution can support those kids so that they are productive, you know, during their time at NEMISA. Now, the programs that we have, accredited, Design Foundation, Film, Television and Video Production, Broadcast Engineering, Radio Production, as well as Live Technical Production on the first page, as indicated there. All of those, the accreditation will expire either 2011 or 2012. In terms of the numerical targets that we have under the different focal areas of performance, in terms of training and development, marketing and business development, as well as organizational sustainability, the target that we originally had of 873 letters, you will see that we were not able to achieve that is training a total number of 873 learners that will be accredited at the end of the financial year. In terms of the number that we have, and that includes the 873 includes full-time learners as well as skills programs that we will run to support community radio stations, for example,
coming up to that number. We were able to recruit 91 full-time students, and the pass rate was at 80%. And the number of students who went through our skills program was 423. One of the constraining factors in terms of having such a number, which in our new strategy has been addressed, is that the physical facilities that we have at NEMIS do not provide for ease of us recruiting such a high number of learners within our facility. So what we are doing to mitigate for that is to have partnerships. For example, here in the Western Cape, we are about to sign an MOU with Bushrady, and a facility that we have at French Hook, with French Hook Radio as well, so that we can use their facilities. Firstly, to expand our footprint so that we are able to reach these learners in areas where they come from, but also to ensure that, given the limitation in terms of physical space that we have, we're able to create, you know, options for us to achieve targets without necessarily having the physical facilities at NEMISA premises. The marketing and business development, we have agreements for training and development projects. Content projects would be issues around digital content, specifically looking at the national digital repository, where NEMISA is doing a lot of good work, which even in our current strategic plan, going into 2010-11, we've already identified, you know, key projects that will be funded through the NDR for us to assist government in preserving our heritage in a digital format. Organizational the sustainability. This is a key performance area, particularly for us, given, you know, aspects of organizational weaknesses that the board and the executives have identified. And you will see that the weighting is 20%. Because without the basic functionality of the organization, all these other aspects will be negatively impacted. So in the report 2009-10, we have managed to meet technology requirements, but not sufficiently for us to position ourselves, particularly when you look at issues of the advent of digital TV. We have not sufficiently covered that the key performance there. In terms of the PSMA, compliance with the PSMA, the CFO will give a report, but we got a clean audit, save for a matter of emphasis, which the AG emphasized. But in terms of the quantity, you know, as well as the risk to the organization, it was something that we had a different opinion in terms of its materiality, as well as the risk that it poses to the organization. But all in all, it is a matter that the Auditor General identified as a matter of emphasis.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. If we look at the financials for the annual report 2009-10, the total income received, as indicated in the slide, is 36 million, with a total expenditure of about 40 million. The deficit indicated on the slide is due to implementation of a new accounting policy, GRAP 23, which relates to retrospective reclassification of deferred income as surplus. That's why we had a deficit. Can you go to the next slide? Opinion as the COO has indicated from the Auditor General is an unqualified opinion with a matter of emphasis on irregular expenditure. It was actually disclosed on note 6, I think, that irregular expenditure, but it wasn't material, but rather than but we disclosed it in our annual financial statement. Thank you.
The performance report for the 6 months from April to September, our strategic focus area, like I've said before, training and development, governance, organizational sustainability, marketing, communication, as well as content development. Now, the board has adopted a new strategy going forward from 2010, and part of that strategy gives a lot of emphasis on how you manage the risk that always arises when organizations establish themselves new performance goals, the restructuring of operations, the setting up of new systems. So a carefully thought out change management process that serves as a platform for achieving the new targets, as well as placing ourselves to meet, you know, in a much more comprehensive manner, the challenges of making ICT available to all. So underlying all the achievements, the targets for 2010 going into 2014 is that they should be a carefully managed change management process that ensures that we mitigate and minimize the risk to the organization. Obviously, building on our strong points. On training and development, we had 21 students, and like I mentioned, the issue of challenges of the poor circumstances from which these children come from. You can see that it's a very significant number of learners that dropped out. 11. We had graphic design at 42, radio production 19, TV production at 22, multimedia special projects at 130. We've got challenges in terms of inadequate capacity, like I said, physical space at NEMISA, the challenge of technology, which in terms of our plans, we may be able to mitigate for some of this, given the resources that we have. The last aspect in terms of multimedia foundation skills on learners is that the skills pool from which we recruit our learners, obviously at high school, primary school level, learners are not exposed to the curricular package that we have at NEMISA. And it's a bit of a challenge for us to strengthen the issue of learner support so that we can retain these learners and not lose the initial investment of having them come over, pay for their tuition and accommodation, and having them drop out. On content development, we've got targets around the SABC education pillar, the National Digital Repository Project, the 2D animation show, as well as a gun as part of the SABC education. The two programs that are in partnership with the SABC education have been planned for the last two quarters of the year. So we already have achievements in terms of the NDR as well as the 2D animation show, except for the two. Where we are planning to have them rolled out in the last two quarters. I have already gone through the challenges earlier. Issues around governance. The restructuring of the organization will entail that we review
how the current policies, the current systems and procedures either inhibit or facilitate, enhance the productivity. So all policies currently in application at NEMIS will are under review. So that we begin to look at, you know, how you achieve faster throughput and not have policies that might be working against your organizational objectives. We have appointed new internal auditors, and like the chairperson indicated, all our senior management positions have been filled. I've just started in October, the CEO started in August. And the CFO also started it in September, mid-September, early September. We have full complement of the board. We've got some issues in terms of the delegate from DOC, and we're hoping that we'll meet with the DOC to expedite this matter, and we're not sure whether the appointment will still be the honor, given the changes in terms of the principal. And full accreditation with MedCita, within the context of challenges that we have mentioned, where we have agreed in principle that between ourselves and MedCita, we need to deal with the structural challenges in terms of accreditation.
The slide that we have there is an extract of the financial performance from April to September. It's an extract of the direct and overhead expenditure. The financial report, the total income is 17 million that we have received, and total expenditure is 18. The deficit also is in terms of the accounting policy, as I have earlier in the earlier slide explained. It has a retrospective and also a prospective effect, where it affects also future expenditure on projects. Thank you.
We shall take questions from the members.
Okay, this is most unusual. I'll take from here if it's okay with you. Member of this. Thank you. Another one, new chair, acting chair. We have new acting chair. Mm-hmm. No, just the issues. Number one, I've just said you referring to the inadequate capacity and space of the talent. What I would like to understand is, what are you intending to do about it? Also, in regards to the reviewing of current policies, as you have said, are there any time frames? Because I don't think we'll keep on reviewing policies forever. There must be time frames when that is going to end. And then on page 13 of your annual report, here you are saying the target for the category for disabled employees has however still not been achieved. If you have not achieved this, why? Underneath there are strategies and objectives on how are we going to do it going forward. But I'm interested to know why it is not achieved. As you have been saying that for 10 years they've been in existence. And then, all the other issues raised by the Auditor General is that their financial statements were subject to material amendments resulting from the auditing. Something is not clear in terms of the Auditor General's opinion in regard to the financial statements. You have partly said something on the irregular expenditure, but in passing, those are some of the issues Auditor General raised as issues. There's an irregular expenditure amounting to 25.08 in cash from a service provider without obtaining three quotes as regulated by the supply chain management. Would like to know why it was not done the proper way. And also on the issue of the 4.472.474 million deficit as compared to 870.276 for 2007. Why this? Some of the things you've tried to catch up, but you don't explain. We need explanations what really happened. Because on these issues of the irregular expenses, even if the board has corrected it, but it will remain for a time being as an opinion, as found by the Auditor General. The other thing is the 2.019355 million on the purchase in capital equipment, but at the end of the financial year, this year, equipment has not yet been received. Where are these equipment? Because the monies are there. And let's see on page, I think page 27. No, let me skip that one. No, let me pause, I'll come back. Maybe you'll answer it once because it's linked to finances also.
Remember, another hand? Oh, Verma.
Thank you, Chairperson. You already mentioned that the deficit of 4 million, as the other member just mentioned, that we are now halfway through this financial year. And you've got already a deficit of 1 million, if I read you correctly. And the reason given for both years is like is the implementation of a new accounting policy, am I correct? So, but we are only halfway to a net deficit of 1 million. So at the end of the financial year, then at what deficit will you be then sitting at then? How come the implementation of this new financial policy, there is a deficit? Wouldn't this then help to prevent that deficit then? Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Maybe I'll just add one question. Honorable Van der Bell.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just want to find out, we all know that, especially in this radio television world, you know, things are developing very fast, the equipment, everything. And to keep up with the equipment, it costs a lot of money, because, as you know, you can train one student, and actually when he arrives at the SABC or radio station, the equipment they are using then are much more advanced, developed, and everything. So this is just a question to hear if you are satisfied, with, especially with all the equipment, electronic editing, and programs on the computers and everything. Are you satisfied with that, or do you need to improve on that? Thank you, Chairperson.
I've got just two questions, quick ones. One is that in relation to your indication that you could not meet some of your targets because you don't have the infrastructure. Now, what then you indicate that you are engaging for partnership and so on, but I just want to check whether don't you think that you have to revise your target so that we work on a target which is achievable, because you think if you put a target depending on other people, you don't know what will turn out in terms of those discussions. At the end, it seems to be a target which is not realistic. I think it's one thing. What is your take around that? But the second one is in relation to, say, this issue of deficits which has been mentioned. Moving forward as an institution.
where are we going? Whether as a new leadership of the institution, you got a view in terms of where are we going and how soon can we be able to turn those things around.
Thanks, Chair and Honorable Members. I'll start with the space challenge that we mentioned. It was part of our first task to mention to the board that we need a campus like space, because the way we're operating, we're still in the same building that NEMISA was started on in 1998, which is an office-like, look-like structure. So it's not conducive for teaching and learning environment. And the board has agreed that the board has further sent a request to DOC as the shareholder about the campus. We have been asked by the shareholder to engage with Public Works to come and do the feasibility study on what type of a size, whether it's the existing buildings that they can give us or it's an empty land, but we have started on that one. The current space that we have in now, it's limited in the sense of if you want to grow in terms of increasing the number of studios, for example, radio studios, it cannot happen because the space allocation that we have now has already been filled with the two little radio studios that we had in those days. This also goes to the item, the question of equipment, on updating the equipment. The equipment that we have here, we're trying by all means to make them function as they are. This is the equipment that was installed around 2002-2003. We're still using the same equipment, upgrading the little things like software that has to do with this sound desk, software that has to do with the edit software or edit suite, which is part of our new strategy to say, while we're using the existing facilities, how can we upgrade the facilities to the new technologies that is needed out there by the industry? So that also goes to the asking of more allocations of funds, which is the request of that is a business plan that we're putting together to say, if we get an environment of a campus, this is how we would like to look like. These are the facilities that we'd like to get to have, that are current facilities and that are talking to the current technologies which is out there. The time frame on the review of policies, we have given ourselves up to November, which is this month, because most of our policies talk to the academic year. So we have given ourselves that come month end November, all the policies that needed to be upgraded, to be reviewed, will be done. And the board has agreed. They gave us that authorization, you can go on. Why? Because we want to say, come intake of the new academic year, they must find out on the new revised policies, because most of them talk to them, affect them. The disability issue, I remember we had a case of a parent when I arrived in August. There was a young girl who had a disability on the hearing. We were addressing that. That lecturers must give that student extra lessons, that lecturers must give that student an individual attention. So they put up that timetable, and they said that's what they've been doing, because this student was on a final year of graphics. On our environment, which is technology, we were discussing it last month with the new executive, because I had to bring this case of this student to them. The first instance of us addressing the disability issue is the request that we put to the last week meeting of the board, that even our toilets were not that open, created enough. It was only on the ground floor where the wheelchair can get access. So the second floor and the third floor, the toilet entrance, the doors were small. So the board approved that we can restructure the entrance. We've put that application to the landlord to give us permission to do that. The equipment, which are facilities that deals with disabilities in our environment, are very expensive. What we managed to get is the braille. We have a braille, which doesn't help that much, because most of our training is computerized, and they must use microphones or sound desk and all of that. So this is the research that we're embarking on, because the manager, the coordinator of student affairs, raised this last month on the management committee, that we're lagging behind on the facilities to cater the disability community. So this is the research that we've told ourselves that we should embark on this research, how to get software, like to teach the radio edit equipment, to teach the television edit suite to the disability communities. So we've embarked on that research. Hence, the little thing that we can do on our side, we've started to embark on that one, like to make the environment suitable for this kind of for the disability community. The equipment that are indicated as not received, this was a concern from the supplier when the report was compiled, because of the delays of the World Cup. Currently we have received them, all those equipment. We have received them. They started to bring them the second week of July. So when the report was compiled, there were, I think it was 60% which was still lacking of those equipment. That is why they were indicated there. Because the auditor had to indicate that some equipment didn't arrive. We have them, all of them. The target, yes, you're right, Chairperson, we need to revise that target. Now, this condition came as the target from the project that we received from the stakeholders or the shareholders, DOC, for example. That number was influenced by a number that DOC said when they gave us the NDR project, National Digitizing Repository. They said they've agreed with the contract state, they've agreed with Sekhukhune Municipality to send us to train youth, about 266 youth from there. So we have included that number on the report as the agreement, the contract to the DOC. Now, DOC didn't reach the agreement of signing the MOU with Sekhukhune Municipality. That was supposed to happen between March and May. So we had to ask them to revise that contract, which they did. They gave us an addendum to that contract, because the auditors were going to query us again about that number. And when we showed them the contract, they were going to say, but the contract is not revised. So they have revised that contract. We received the addendum end of July. Because that number didn't happen, therefore it affected us. That is why we have to explain this number. I remember even on the AGM, the minister asked about the same target numbers. So we have to sit and explain this. This was the influence of this project on the target. But of course, on our in-house target numbers, we have exceeded by the numbers that we received from other projects that we received from the stakeholders. On the new strategy that we're currently doing now, we partner with the stakeholders that are involved in training, like NEMCETA. This week, Friday, we're going to sign an MOU with MBDA and NEMCETA. This partnership is going to guarantee us that when we bring a new program, that is a short program, either a learnership or RPL, NEMCETA, how are you going to treat us? MBDA is coming in as part of the research component, because what MBDA found out is when they are out there funding this community project, they've realized that the community members are lacking training. So they bring a request to us as NEMCETA to say, community A is lacking training on multimedia production, ICT, computer literacy, basic computer literacy. Then we will design that, send it to NEMCETA. And other partnerships that we tend to get vehicles to help us on delivery, because our mandate is rural. Now, as NEMCETA, based in Pakistan, we cannot always be traveling to the rural communities. So we're trying to get this partnership. We put up a partnership plan to the board that they have approved last week, stakeholder relationship plan. Last month, we went to the University of Zululand, Ngoye campus, both in Richards Bay and the main campus. We went to Northwest University in end of August. We are to go to the University of Venda. We haven't secured the date, but we've started communication with them. We've started communications with the University of Johannesburg. We're trying to form this alliance so that these institutions can help us delivering in those areas. We can use their center to take trainings there to their areas. And some of the needs, which is niche areas, they are known to them. We're up here, we don't know them. So with this partnership, we're hoping that they will help us. The University of Walter Sisulu in East London, we have been engaged with the ECDC in Eastern Cape, that they are starting a plan of designing a training center in multimedia in cooperation with a provincial TV that they are establishing. So they have identified us as a trainer to their facilities. So we're hoping that these partnerships will help us to can say, for example, the University of Zululand can say, our community needs training in broadcasting. Then we can take the broadcasting training to that community, which is really talking to them. So these are the partnerships that we're trying to put up, and we've started to initiate, and we're pleased and to announce that the plan has been approved by our board. It's for us. Our target to this plan is between now and next year, June, that this partnership and stakeholders' relations must be completed at that time, and we must be talking of MOUs that will be visible and will be our drivers to these communities. The DCC and that Auditor General, I think the CFO will help me on that. CFO?
Yeah, the issue of the irregular expenditure of 25,080. That are okay, it's correct that the three quotations were not obtained. But what had happened was that the board at that time, to secure the services of a recruitment consultant, had requested the DOC to, if they could use their service provider for that. So the services, we thought by using the DOC we do not need to get additional quotations, but the auditor general interpreted it differently. That's the reason why we actually ended up with a net of emphasis. So, yeah, I'm not sure if there's any more. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. I want to actually talk about the deficit, and because the deficit actually talks also about the material restatements that have been indicated. What GRAP 23, the new accounting policy, states is that if you have income received from projects, you have to recognize it in the year that it occurs. For example, if we have an ADR project, although it runs over 3 years, we recognize it in the year that we actually receive the money, although the project runs over a couple of years. So you find that the expenses are going through each and every year, but the income has already been recognized in other years. So in order for the company to access the income, it has to make a loss so that it actually accesses it via accumulated surplus, because the money is an accumulated surplus in the balance sheet rather than in the income statement. That's why we have a deficit. The deficit we are actually budgeted for the current year is because of the projects that are still going on, the National Depository is still carrying on. We have community radio project, which is still going on. If you look at our balance sheet on our annual report, you will see that there is about in our accumulated surplus, we have about 13 million. That 13 million relates to the project concerning the National Depository and the community radio projects that we're still actually rolling out. That's why we actually made a deficit. But we are actually anticipating that we'll be making a deficit at the end of the year of 1.4 million. Way forward, that the executive that actually spoke about was that the partnership that we're going to have with that the CEO actually mentioned will actually help us also to boost up our revenue, because our revenue, the way we looked at it historically, hasn't actually been coming through because of the mandate that we've got, that we have to get students from a historically disadvantaged background. Sometimes some get bursaries, some don't get bursaries. Those that don't get bursaries don't actually make good on their promises to pay us, which also gives a heavy load to our income stream. The restatement part comes in where you have to go back to other years, 2009, 2008, 2007, to recognize all those incomes that you have received in those particular years. If you look at our annual financial statement for 2009-10, you'll see that we have March 2009 saying they're restated, which means that we had to go back all the other years as practical as we could get the contracts to actually recognize the accounting standards for those years. That's what GRAP 23, the new accounting policy, states. But for us, in order for us to actually access the money for community radio projects, for national repository projects, we have to actually access it via the accumulated loss. That's accumulated surplus, sorry. So that's why we're actually making a loss. Yeah, we also detailed it on note 8 on page 52 on the non-exchange revenue. If you see on note 8 page 52, you see that our non-exchange revenue for 2009 started out at 17 million, and the project funding outflow for GRAP 23 implementation came to 14 million. That's us
recognizing the expenditure for all the years and also the utilizing it. So we actually left with only 3 million out of the project funding in terms of what should be non-exchange and exchange revenue. But the rest of the recognition lies in accumulated surplus in the balance sheet. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, but we must come to before you collapse, because you must have your lunch at the house starting at 2. Cora to the bells will be ringing.
No, Honorable Chair, it's just a follow up. Maybe the question is answered. They didn't hear it. It's fine because they can. On the issue of the financial statements that are put into the Auditor General, he's saying the financial statements were subject to material amendments resulting from the audit, page 27 under internal control, where he also raises the issues of policy procedure and leadership. I remember I asked clarity on those issues. What is the take on that statement?
The matter is the policy, is the procedures and the leadership. You see, what dealing with is a post-mortem. It's an annual report, it happened. And you must explain why it happened. Or why the Auditor General is saying there's a problem of leadership, or there was a problem of leadership and policy procedure. There is no way out, it can't be future exposed. But we need to know why it happened. Maybe you tell us when you come with the way forward, how are you curing that particular thing. So it's a post-mortem issue.
Thank you. Yeah, it is true. This talks to the performance information, which was not accurate at that time. That's why it's indicated there. So, yes, you're right there, Honorable Member. We, as part of our review of policies and procedures, we even invited the AG 2 weeks back to come and workshop us on the performance procedures and policies. The AG took us through the whole process, and we're putting up step by step that performance plan that talks to all those procedures. And it was also talking to the reporting lines. There were no proper reporting lines of the whole organization at that time. So the AG has given us a lot of indicators that we're following up on revising this. Once we're done, we also call them again. They said anytime we can, they will be to our assistance. And until we have proper policies and procedures. So we're trying.
In short, you are saying the previous board didn't do its work. Or you see, because there can be no two ways. Why it was not in place? Why? It's either they done their work or they didn't do their work because it has passed already.
Can I come in, Chair? You know, what is happening is that in this current financial year, the 2011 financial year, the Auditor General intends auditing performance information, and they're going to express an opinion specifically on performance information. So what they've been trying to do leading up to this date is to get the auditors ready to be audited on performance information. Now, the performance targets as defined were not clearly defined, and they were, you know, which is what I think that I'm alluding to here, to make sure that now in the current year, you must have that, you must have your key performance areas clearly defined. That's the comment here.
You see, who was supposed to class or to define the key performance area?
Well, you see, I think it should be clearly defined for audit purposes. Which, you know, I mean, you see, those technical objectives are slightly different as to what maybe the board might be required.
What was supposed to define?
So I'm talking about as to what the board was requiring. What I'm trying to say, They, you see, as I said, they were preparing the audit to be audited in the coming year. So this is mainly, so this is like more of advice to say, you are not quite ready in terms of the way you are setting your objectives and your performance standards, you are not ready. Because that's what they were saying, which we have had to address in this year. And then just like also on the issue of the financial statements being adjusted, this the introduction of this graph 23 was a major, it was quite a major issue around the audit of 2010. The standard is only going to be implemented in this current year of 2011. But the auditors never decided that they are going to audit based on that standard. And which is why you needed to have these restatements of the numbers and these material adjustments being done to the financial statements. So I think what happened is that we were not ready for the implementation because we thought it's coming in this coming financial year. But then they wanted it already. So the financial statements that were submitted to them on the 31st of May were not based on CRAP 23. So that is the reason, that is why these adjustments had to be made.
No, I'm saying you were caught out of guard by you before. No, it's okay. Members, can we... thanks very much, Enemy, for your presentation. But we hope that we need to create time. I don't think we've interacted with you correctly or in detail in terms of what you are doing and understanding your way forward. What is key here is that how do we proceed from here moving forward. I think we'll have to create time post this meeting so that you come back, you go into detail exactly what are you going to do and how you are going to achieve that. But for the purpose of the annual report, I would say for today, at least we have that particular view in terms of what they are doing and so on. But we need to create more time. But we will come back to you in terms of when to do that and so on, so that you've got more time to engage and understand exactly. But for today, thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you.
And we also thank the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members.
Members, we've got one issue. A housekeeping one. That's what the Honorable Chair but always says, housekeeping. We've got the issue of the shortlisting of ICASA, which the task team is supposed to meet tomorrow between 12 and 1. It's just a reminder, but they will still have to communicate the day in terms of the meeting. I hope all the parties are ready with their nomination, so that tomorrow maybe we can deal with the shortlisting part. Moving forward, how do we deal with it? I'm sure the Democratic Alliance will indicate who's going to be there. Okay. Nondaba, it's yourself. It's you, themselves. The ANC, I'm sure, will continue with the week and the chair to represent us in the task team. We'll communicate the time, the venue tomorrow, today, during the course of today, and then tomorrow we'll meet at 12 to finalize that. I'm told that ANC members, after the house, there will be meeting in terms of consolidating their nomination. The venue will be communicated once the house is proceeding. So open yourself. Thank you very much, members, for your patience not to go for lunch. We are done for the day.